Okay, so just to confirm, yes, in fact, the Skype recorder is recording it right now. All right, who do we got?
You.
All right, we got Chewy. Who else we got?
Hey, sexy ladies.
Oh, that's Eric.
Hey, guys, how's it going? It's John.
AKA some guy that no one on the internet knows. Okay, we're all good.
But I'm known on the internet.
Yeah, I don't think I have quite the reputation that you guys have preceding you.
Nope, but that's always good. Alright.
That's so cute. He thinks we have a reputation.
Let's get it! Technology.
My wife is here.
Nerdcast.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to CommanderCast, episode 150-something. We're your weekly source for community, strategy, and technology, hosted on mtgcast.com and our home site, commandercast.com. We're recording this on July 17th, 2014. My name is William, and I'm the host of the show. And today, I am joined by a team of globe-trotting commander players. Gentlemen, sound off. Mr. Eric, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm good. How are you? Captain Contrary is back to tell Will why he's wrong about everything.
And you will have many opportunities to do that. Joining us today, for the second time, is Mr. Lead Dog himself, Chewy. How are you doing today, sir?
Yo! I'm a dork.
And for the first time today, and probably the first time on the internet making himself known, Jonathan of East Coast Commander.
How's it going, guys? This will be the first time I get the pleasure of being here, so excited, you know.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. I think I hear something in the distance. It's the sound of angry, aggressive combat. Coming in fast and furious, it's coming!
Boobs.
Is that just a Calvin soundbite? You have a Calvin...
Calvin, you gotta come in with more energy! I gave you the setup!
Boobs.
Ladies and gentlemen, by great coincidence, we've got my normal co-host, Mr. Captain Red Zone, Calvin. How are you doing today, sir?
Boop.
I'm just gonna keep pushing this button over and over again.
This is awful.
I'm expecting at least 25 of that, so knock me out of the park here if you really want to try and break that.
He has a Calvin drawstring and he just pulls it to get a boobs.
I wish I had a drawstring to pull to get a boobs. Boobs.
And now, okay, so yeah, we've got Eric, Chewy, Jonathan, and Calvin's here joining us regularly because he had class canceled. Much to glory.
My surprise.
Wait a minute, hold on. Are you telling me that Calvin has class?
Not today.
Okay. And so he actually is here. It's not just a soundboard. But... Calvin, can you say a unique phrase for me just to confirm that you're here?
That works.
Let's see.
Yeah, all right. That's fair.
I got my drinking buddy back.
Hey, buddy.
So, guys, it's time to go ahead and kick off a new Thief Commander cast. Calvin, how many episodes have we done so far?
At the moment, it's over 52. I lost track of count last time we got to 52 because, you know, I was, you know, school and work and numbers is just not really my forte at the moment. But I do know it's over 52.
Okay, so this is 152 something.
Yeah, in total, yeah, it's like 150. I believe this is 55. Because I remember, I think like when I told you it was 52, you still had like 4 more episodes or something like that. 3 or 4 more episodes in that season. I can go back and check, but not right now, though.
Okay.
So... I'll just edit it in. I'll edit the actual number in right about here.
This is episode 157.
Awesome. All right. So, gentlemen.
That's cheating.
That's what editing is for, gentlemen. All right. So, before we can go ahead and continue, first thing I've got to ask everyone who their favorite commander is this week. And that's actually kind of relevant since we just got back from a 4-week break, the last that we shall ever have. Eric, go first.
Right now, it's still probably Prosh, but I'm experimenting with a Shattergang Goblin Tribal deck. And I'm trying to do an aggressive Sekhwar deck, so I'll get back to you.
Awesome. Chewy.
Since I don't actually play Magic, I had to think real hard for a minute. But my current favorite that was chosen not at all at random from my commander decks that I have over here somewhere is the Black Achroma, Spirit of the Night. Ha ha!
Ooh, I love that
spicy. Deck.
All right, Jonathan, favorite commander this week?
Favorite commander this week and just forever and ever, Dak and Blackblade. I have my Land Ramp Esper deck that I just will never, ever, ever take apart because it's so much fun to play.
The hell?
Somebody didn't like that person.
He just gets censored for
that.
That was my
food getting here. There's Masamon Curry with my name on it, so right. He knew.
Curry.
And did not like it, apparently.
All right. So, next step. Everyone's got to be able to share a story about said commander. So, Eric, why don't you actually tell us about how you came about rebuilding Prosh? Because I know that you've got a little journey with that.
Well, basically what happened was I took my Prosh deck apart, and then I was trying to scale down the power level of my decks for a while. So I was trying to play something that could still, like, be explosive and stuff like that without necessarily being Prosh. And then everyone else in Ottawa decided not to do that and just keep on going about their business. So I was getting crushed a little bit. This all led to the only other guy in Ottawa who refuses to play blue finally caved and made a white-blue flicker deck. So I decided that if he's going to be going that route, then I'm allowed to go Jerkface Jund and crush people for 30 damage all at once.
That seems totally fair.
Yeah, screw blue.
All right, Chewie, tell us something about Spirit of the Night, because this is one of those weird commanders that I never hear about.
Oh, yeah, he's the Black Achroma, like I said, from, oh crap, Visions? Is it Visions? Hang on.
It's Mirage.
Mirage?
It's Mirage. I knew it was one of those two. So I wanted to build just a mono black good stuff commander deck, and I looked at all of the current, you know, at the time, modern mono black legendary creatures, and they were all gonna push the deck in some direction. So I said, oh yeah, and I went to my, old stuff rare binder, and I pulled out a few old mono black commanders, and I had Issan Shade and Baron Singer and Grandmother Singer, but she's terrible, and the Spirit of the Night. And after staring at the Spirit and the Shade and the Baron for a while, I realized that Issan Shade is kind of dumb. Baron Singer has no legs, so you gotta go with Spirit of the Night.
Have you ever sacrificed those three creatures to get them out?
I don't even own two of those creatures. I've got one of them, and it's the one with the ability. And I'm like, sacrifice what?
I'm not even sure what three they are. They're horrible, but, you know, just for posterity's sake, I'd at least like you to try next time around.
If I ever run into copies of them in a bulk box somewhere, I'm going to buy them.
All right, good. We got that going.
All right, Jonathan, your turn. Tell us a story about Mr. Dak and Blackblade.
Oh, Dak and... So this is... I love running it because it's very strange to just see ramp. And there is no artifact ramp whatsoever. It's all lands. We got Solomon there, you know, Core Cartographer, all that ilk. And then it just runs all the landfall guys, Obnixilus and the ilk, Admonition Angel, and my favorite Royal Elemental. And, you know, you have things, the fetch lands, popping two of those landfall triggers a turn, Planar Birth, getting you, if you sacrifice all your lands to, say, a Zeron Orb, getting everything in and even more of the landfall triggers. I've had my favorite moment, I think, in the deck, though. I didn't win this game, but I had an Obnixilus out and a Rite of Replication on a Corpsejack Menace. And we were going exponentially up on triggers for that. So that was very fun. He was about by the end of it, like 7,000 or so power.
Buh.
Yeah. It happens.
You need 2,000.
Just a standard day for Prosh, by the way.
Needs 2,000 more to be a meme, though.
I was gonna say. Prosh is unimpressed by your power levels until it reaches meme, categories.
I'll get a guy on that. I'll see what I can muster up. People know, alright?
So, speaking of meme levels of awesome, this is actually a good segue into something that's pretty relevant as of late, and something that I want to go ahead and keep plugging, because we've got, what, a week left in the Kickstarter?
Who, me? Yeah, actually, as of the time of this recording, we've got 6 days to go. This runs out Thursday morning at 10:30 Eastern, because it's exactly 30 days from when I hit go, and I hit go at 10:30 Eastern.
Calvin, can we get
those late early morning contributions on that last day, I'm sure.
I hope so.
Calvin, can we get this up on Monday?
Yeah, this will be up on Monday.
Sweet! People!
This will be up this Monday. Well, if you're listening to this, this is going to go up, what's today? The
12th?
Today's the 17th?
Yeah, so
this will be up on the 19th?
21st.
No, 21st?
Yeah.
No,
yeah, that's Monday.
Oh, yeah, today is Thursday. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong month. Yeah,
we've already
Thursday,
established.
17, 21. Yeah.
We've already established Calvin and numbers.
Yeah, numbers are horrible. In all honesty, for me, like, the weeks are only, like, days now. Numbers no longer matter. You're like, what day is it? Is it Monday? Is it Tuesday? Okay, I know where I have to be. Other than that, nope.
No, the only numbers Calvin cares about are, is it zero, and you're not at zero yet.
But, yeah, so this will go up on the 21st, so we used to still have at least, what, three more days?
3 days.
And, I'll send it over to MTGcast so Chewy could, like, stick it up on the 21st there if he wants to as well. Mm-hmm. I'll send it up the same night.
All right, so let's...
That way we can try to reach more people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, to be clear, Chewy, the most basic level that you want to reach of $10,000 has already been reached, correct?
Yes, that means we're gonna do it. And unless lots of people pull out at the last minute.
Phrasing?
unless a lot of people cancel their funding. Sorry, yes sir. Unless a lot of people cancel their funding at the last minute, we are good to go. So now it's no longer a matter of, oh god, let's get me there so that you can have stuff. You're getting stuff. So now every donation, actually goes to reaching stretch goals and getting me more time to focus on creating content and making this an actual job.
Yeah, so guys, just remember, don't pull out at the last minute or Chewie can't have his baby.
Raise it.
And that would make me sad.
Yes. Actually, something I did want to ask you about, Chewie. Have you ever considered doing, like, the Patreon thing?
Yeah, but I wanted to get the Kickstarter out of the way first, and then, you know, later set up a Patreon for those that would rather give a little bit at a time. That way, it helps with the turning it into a job and paying bills and stuff while I continue to produce content. I've actually started doing videos, actually. I got sucked into working on my second random card of the day video when I looked down and said, holy crap, I gotta turn on Skype. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, William finally sent me a message. Yeah.
Well, what can I say? I remembered last minute that I had to actually edit show notes. So, you're not the only one. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and put the link to Chewie's random card of the day into the show notes.
And I personally have watched that video, the first one, for the artifact creature with modular. What was it? Arcbound...
Crusher.
Ravager? Crusher?
Crusher.
Crusher? Yeah. Like, that video was actually pretty funny, and I actually really enjoyed it. And I even shared it on the CommanderCast Facebook page. So in case you're too lazy to go over to, you know, YouTube and actually click it and subscribe, which I highly recommend, you can always just go over to Facebook and click it and then go there and click subscribe, which I highly recommend.
All right.
Thank you, Galvin. I do too.
All right. So guys, M15 is in full swing. We got to miss the entirety of spoiler season, so people did.
You guys did. Rivals Duel had all sorts of spoilery episodes.
Okay, but you had, like, 2 episodes during the break. We had, like, 0. And 2 episodes is, like, every other week, too.
Yep. We already did our set review.
Regardless, people did not have to listen to us hem and haul over cards for, like, 4 weeks straight.
Math is hard.
We'll just condense it all now.
Exactly. Thank you, Jonathan. Instead, we're actually going to condense all of the M15 stuff into one compact episode. And I actually like where this is going to go. So, first up on our community segment, we're going to bring up the age-old debate, Titans versus Souls.
Age-old debate.
Does that really qualify as age-old debate? I mean,
like,
really, that's only what, like,
debate, maybe?
Weeks?
I don't know.
In dog years, it's still a child.
Thank you. That's the joke. Ha! Thank you for explaining it to me.
We have more pragmatists than dreamers here, I guess.
So what you're really saying is it took Eric to explain to you your own dream and joke?
I hate you.
Yes. And here on Commander Cast, we get another episode where Calvin and Eric unite to crush Will's dreams.
Which basically equals up to, like, roughly every 3 days. Like, actually, like, online we do that, like, on a continuous basis. I just shoot him emails telling him I hate him so much, and then, you know, don't respond.
Random hateful email of the day.
Well, as gay as I am, I have to have a straight man somewhere. So you know what? We're going to go straight into the debate. Stay tuned, everyone. It's Titans versus Souls.
I mean, Chewie, you do realize 10,000 is still over 9,000, right?
True,
I
but
mean,
I wanted to have an over 9,000, like, joke, and then, like, for the next video, do a we made it, and then we, but then we made it. Like, well,
well,
for that idea.
So it was a little premature, I guess.
I have that problem constantly.
Raise it.
I mean, what?
Okay, hang on. We've got pulling out, and we've got premature ejaculation. Those are crossed off the list. How many more awkward sexual situations are we gonna hit this episode?
Well, it depends on if someone gets slapped with a wet duck. Alright, so, this was an inevitable comparison, guys. Six sixes were six. A whole cycle of them. Six of them versus another iconic six that just terrorized Standard and pretty much set the bar for EDH today. It's the Titans and the new contenders, the Souls. Now, we actually posted this question to the Facebook page, or rather, Calvin did. And Calvin...
That's right.
Yeah, Calvin, what kind of response did we get from our Facebook page?
Then I guess that's like the cue to kick into the brand new home version.
Hello everyone, this is Calvin, I'm also known as Captain Redzone on the internet, I'm bringing you the Commander Cast home version. This week, Commander Cast wants to ask if you think the Souls are the new Titans, and how do you think they stack up? Over on the Twitter page, we have @GUDoug saying, they have similar converted mana costs, are in a core set, and not even close to the same thing. @JTT_magic, sounds like @GUDougs is tired of this comparison. In my honest opinion, it's a disservice for the Souls to be compared. We have Mr. E Meat 4000 saying Titans are better. They're very different cards. One is good ETBs. One is situational, expensive, converted mana cost flashback. And now over on the Facebook page, Zapdos Zapperson says Soul of Innistrad and Soul of New Phyrexia are possibly better than most of the Titan cycle. Soul of Ravnica is extremely situational. The other three are very middle of the road. They won't push out the Titans. But be their best friends, except Soul of Ravnica. Screw that guy. We have Ethan Fox saying, well, the Green Soul automatically wins over its corresponding Titan in EDH by the virtue of not being banned. Comparing the others, the Black and the Artifact Souls are both pretty solid, won't push out Grey Titan or Wormpool Engine, but will probably see play alongside them. As for the other Souls, meh, the blue one is particularly awful though. And we have to round out the rest of this, Sean Hudson. The Green Soul, blah. His onboard ability, fine. But that same ability from the graveyard, lame. It's super low impact. That does it for this week's edition of the Commander Cast home version. It is up on Facebook. It's up on Twitter. Respond to the Commander Cast home version question. And next week, we might actually read off your response. Until next time, this is Captain Redzone signing out.
No, we do have people on Facebook have been commenting on the various things involving the Titans and the Soul avatars and stuff like that. But, you know, most of the comparisons have gone pretty much one of two directions. It's either A, the Titans are flat out better from most people's view, or B, it's like the small group of souls is comparable to their counterparts, while this other group pretty much doesn't. And I think a lot of people are actually kind of underestimating the actual souls that they haven't seen so far in comparison to the Titans. Mainly because since the Titans have the Enter the Battlefield triggers, everyone's like, oh, they're obviously better because, you know, all you gotta do is cast them and boom, value. But the souls from, like, you know, no one seems to be really paying too much attention to the fact that the souls give you a lot of value over time. As long as you're willing to, like, you know, invest into them. And even if you don't, like, you know, like, once they're dead, like, you have to, like, resurrect the Titans. The souls, you can still get at least a good usage out of them while sitting in a graveyard.
And souls
that's
are,
pretty much...
I was going to say, the souls are way, way better with Entomb.
It's a speed top trick. Just add black.
That's racist.
So, Jonathan.
Yes.
You were about to say something.
Yeah, well, first thing initially, I mean, there isn't, if we're going Titans, there is no prime time in this soul cycle. I mean, there, it's, none of them in my eyes are gonna get banned at some point. They're all gonna be solid role players in decks. And like Calvin said, if you invest the mana in them, I definitely can see them making an impact on EDH. Soul of Theros is probably my favorite out of this, just because he can put some decks over the top pretty easily, even if he's in the graveyard. So, at the very least, they're going to be good role players, but I still think, generally for EDH, you're going to be able to recur the Titans just as much. You're seeing those ETB triggers off blinks, off attacks, off graveyard recursion, so they are still far and away some of the best creatures we have, but the souls will still be solid.
I think that all of them are... Like, I don't think any, soul is stronger than its comparable Titan, except for the black one. I think Soul of Innistrad is amazing, and that it's being way undervalued. I think people are going to get blown apart by that card a couple times, and then they'll learn to, like, fear and respect its power. But that card's scary. And anyone who's played against, like, Angel of Serenity knows how powerful it can be to get three cards from your graveyard back in your hand.
Agreed. That is very much a good tool to have.
Now, for the record, when we're talking about our Titan versus Soul cycles, because the Souls do have the Soul of New Phyrexia, which is the indestructible one of the cycle, he actually
You mean the artifact?
No, I mean it gives indestructible. Like
he's an artifact creature.
Yeah, it's the artifact creature. But we do include, Wormcoil Engine into the original Titan cycle. And Wormcoil Engine is a really kick-ass creature. Let's be honest here. Wormcoil Engine goes into a lot of decks.
Well, the main reason why we have to include Wormcoil Engine in is because he's a 6/6/6 that came out, right after the Titans originally showed up, I believe it was.
Yeah.
The Titans showed up like, I think, what was it, M...
11.
12? M11?
M11, then M12. Yeah, as reprints.
And then, and right in between there, that's when we got,
Scarf.
That's when we went to Mirrodin, right?
Yep.
Correct.
And the Wormcoil Engine showed up in there. And quite frankly, when the Titans got played and Wormcoil Engine showed up, he pretty much took the place of the sixth Titan, the artifact version. And, you know, for good reason too. I mean, it's a 6/6/6, same cost, same size, same body. Had a generic effect on him, which was a death touch and lifelink. And even though he didn't get the ability to attack and get like a trigger or the whole like, you know, enter the battlefield effect, he did have the ability to poop out two more copies of worm tokens. And one of them was death touch, the other one was lifelink, which was still pretty backbreaking and standard at the time when he showed up.
Okay, so the thing I want to go ahead and put out there is, actually, as a preamble to what I'm about to say, guys, who went to the pre-release and how did you like it?
I did not go to the pre-release. I had someone who went to the pre-release to fetch the cards that I needed.
Jonathan, Calvin, what about you guys?
I did not get a chance. I was in Pennsylvania that weekend, actually. Had a great time out there, but could not make the pre-release. So I haven't actually seen these cards in play yet and haven't really heard too much about them. This is all conjecture on my point.
I got sick and died, I didn't get sick and died. I got sick enough to where I didn't want to risk infecting my fellow Magic players. But my two Mana Pool co-hosts that went raved about how awesome the set was. And
dude, Have you seen most Magic players? What could you infect them with that's worse than what they already have?
What?
I mean, I'm covered in sores. Am I the only one? Is that just me?
Well, also, it got worse. Like, my throat hurt kind of bad, and it got worse the more I talked. And if I went to a pre-release, I knew that by the time it came time to do another podcast, I'd be like, hello again, and welcome to the Manipole. And no one wants to hear that, so.
Unless it's a Halloween episode.
Here we have the Manipole, hosted by the Crypt Keeper.
Exactly.
Alright.
And so, I work on Saturday, so no, I didn't go to the pre-release either. Okay. What about you, William? Did you take your butt out there and try to sling some cards at a pre-release, or were you busy judging?
I got to do some of both. Went to a midnight release at Fog of Dusk. It's an awesome Magic store. You should go and check it out sometime.
Hey, yeah. Hey. That's copyrighted, sir.
Look, I got clues on the chat right here. I will tell him.
I do it
only. Like, tell Clues William owes him $5.
It's not stealing if it's an homage.
Oh, he's got us there. Yeah. Balls.
So, I went out, did a midnight event, went to Comic Town, which is also a great store. You should check it out sometime. Did my judging there. The next day, I went out with my roommate and did my second pre-release, and I actually took second in that one. But the whole weekend, whether I was judging or just looking at other tables or anything, the one thing I kept seeing were people just getting blown out by Soul of Theros. Like, it is incredible how backbreaking that ability is. Giving your whole team 2/2 first strike and lifelink.
They're baby Akromas.
They may be a whole team of Akromas. Like, Soul of Theros is one of the single most powerful Titan-like cards ever, and one of the cards that really pushes the cycle to be comparable to the original Titan cycle. Like, if you want to talk about just straight up counterparts, yeah, so the Sun Titan is really good at recursion. It's really good value engines. But the Soul of Theros just straight up beats stuff down.
And yeah, when we were trying to predict what the other colored souls were on the mana pool, we came up with ideas for the white one. And when we got to, oh, well, maybe it's an anthem effect that's you can just repeat. We thought about it for a second, and all of us said, nah. That's too good for a repeatable effect. And then they went and made it better than what we said. The hell, man.
No.
Man, you have nothing on Magic's power creep. They're going to reach levels you don't even know. Wait until you see the 6/6 for one with no drawback. It's insane.
It costs two.
So, like,
Still dies to Doomblade, though.
But even after you kill with Doomblade, it still does a thing. And that's one of the things about playing EDH, right? You wait a few turns, people forget what's in your graveyard when they're not paying attention, or if they're just occupied by something else. Like, you might have
the
TV on, or someone might be doing something crazy. And then you swing, or they swing at you, and you're like, okay, exile my dude, do a trick. Like, even the Soul of Chandelar, which is just burn someone for 3 and one of their dudes for 3, as a graveyard combo, as a graveyard combat trick, that can steal things out of nowhere. And that's another thing. One of the biggest things that they kept pointing out on Facebook was that, yeah, the Titans give you good value when they enter the field, but then sometimes they just get walled off. Like, for whatever reason, you can't attack people. Like, we've had games of Commander in my store where people have had to get political about swinging with the Sun Titan because they need to get something back. But it's like, okay, I can swing into this situation where the Sun Titan's just going to die and I don't get anything back. Or I can try and hit this guy, and then he'll be down to dangerously low levels of health, or he's going to be really mad and then hit me back for some reason. But I've got to try and play it nice. Like, hey, guy, can I attack you? Like, I just need to get the thing, and I haven't really done anything to you all day. Like, what?
So you just don't want people getting whiny about where their Titans are going?
Well, it's not that, but it's the fact that the Titans get you into those situations.
I understand where you're coming from with that. I mean, you do see it a lot, because people want those Titan triggers. That's one thing that you do want that value every turn. And no matter what, you want to be swinging, so it does get into those situations where you try to be as profitable as possible.
Like,
you wouldn't have that problem if you used, a Mimic Vat.
Like,
thanks, man.
Like, okay, so which Titan would you say is the worst of the Titan sect?
Frost Titan.
Frost Titan? Probably. Like,
I don't know, man. Yeah. I was on the receiving end of a Frost Titan way too many times.
Yeah, but the thing is Frost Titan's really good against the other Titans. Or if your opponent has only, like, one creature out, then it's really good against that. But in all other cases, Frost Titan is just underwhelming compared to the effects you get from the other ones. Because Inferno Titan, it can just kill in one hit. It removes, right? And that's the really good thing, because that's value. But if you can't remove anything, it's because your opponent doesn't have creatures, and then you're just killing them in one hit. Sun Titan can bring back, like, brutal stuff. Like, it can recur Strip Mine every turn, and you can blow out your opponent's lands, or it can recur a sacrifice effect, like a Steve or something like that, or a Fleshbag Marauder. The Grave Titan will overrun your opponent if it's left alone. Like, Frost Titan takes forever to kill someone, and all the other Titans will do it way faster.
And, like, comparably, the worst soul of the soul cycle is, what, Soul of Ravnica? Soul of Zendikar?
Soul of Zendikar.
Zendikar, I'd say. Ravnica, it depends on the deck, but...
I was gonna say...
But the main reason why I say, like, Soul of Ravnica is because if I'm playing with it, I'm more than likely expecting to at least get some good kind of card draw going out of it. I mean, granted, it is based on colors, so I went and played on a mono-blue deck, because it's like, seven mana, draw a card. Sorry, I'm not doing that. But, like, I could easily see it being, like, if it's in a three-color deck or a five-color deck, it's going to end up, like, you know, here, draw a hand.
Calvin, if you're playing five colors, are you really going to put a piece of crap like Soul of Ravnica into the deck and take up a card slot?
I am.
Yeah, because I would exile it to my graveyard, and I would just pay seven mana, draw five cards randomly out of nowhere when no one was expecting it.
William chimed in with an I am, and that's really all I needed for that argument to be over. Okay, I'm confident I'm in the right on this one.
Okay, but at least, the Soul of Ravnica is at least a 6/6 flyer, as opposed to the Frost Titan, which you can just block with your Kobold tokens all day, right?
If he doesn't, like, freeze them over.
Are you playing Kobold tokens in Commander? Really?
I am, I play Prosh.
Weird.
Yeah, comparatively, the Titans have they're more explosive on the front, but the Titans could just overtake them. Like, the Infernal Titan scatter shots whenever it attacks. Okay, you can remove their Death Touch snakes and all that. The Soul of Chandelar, once you get enough mana, or if you just get, like, Illusionist Bracers on any of these guys, then they get ridiculous. Like, even just 10 mana, shoot a Titan and burn someone for 6 with the Soul of Chandelar.
Yeah, but the thing is that these guys take that mana investment, right? The Titans, you're talking about how if someone's able to do something to screw with your combat, then it gets really inconvenient to try and get that value. But, like, even if you only get, like, one trigger off of a Titan from it entering the battlefield, that's still guaranteed value, as opposed to the Souls, which can eat a Path to Exile or a Terminus or something like that. On the turn that they come out, and then you get nothing.
Eric, that's a good point, because I wanted to make this about the Soul of Phyrexia. Now, he was the one that seemed to be getting the most pub going in, but the more I look at him, you're paying 6 to put him on the field, unless you're recurring him somehow, and then everybody else at the table knows, okay, and at least one turn, everything's going to be indestructible, they'll be going for that. So, in my head, it's like, okay, if I have an exile effect, it's going right there. It's one of those cards you're just going to be like, okay, let's just get it the hell out of here. It's rarely ever going to feel indestructible unless it's in the graveyard, and that's just going to be a nice surprise thing.
Yeah, and, like, that's the problem when you compare them to something like the Titans or Wormcoil Engine, which they generate their value without any more mana invested. So you don't have to worry about, like, yeah, am I gonna have the mana you open to use this right away? And with the Souls, you're not. You're never, unless you're top decking super late game, you're not gonna, like, I'm gonna play my Soul with 7 mana open so I can activate its ability. But, whereas the Titans, they come down and they're like, okay, when I play this Titan, I know I'm getting the effect. When I play Sun Titan, I know I'm getting something back. When I play Inferno Titan, I know I'm bolting something. And then if my opponent answers it, that's fine, but I still got my value.
Alright, so you make a good point on the value. Yeah, the souls don't have that immediate value. But let's go ahead and take that weakness where they just have these huge mana sinks and flip it on its ear. They are very good mana sinks, especially late game. Late game, answers are running dry. More people are getting into top deck mode unless they're playing a zombie for whatever reason. Not me. But the souls give you inevitability, right? Like, the soul is making 3/3s, whereas the Grave Titan's making like, okay, it's making a pair of 2/2s every time it swings. Okay, that's a little, okay, yeah.
That's still better than that.
Yeah. But the soul can still just make...
You got a 6/6 death touch that's giving you 4 power versus a 6/6 reach that's only giving you 3.
Right. But still making a bunch of 3/3s, especially late in the game when you're more likely to just untap with them. The soul of Chandelar continues to just burn people. And remember, that damage can be redirected to Planeswalker. So you're shooting a creature and a player slash Planeswalker. The soul of Innistrad is getting you all the gas you need because it's just returning all your creatures late game when you have a graveyard full of creatures. Soul of Theros, no explanation needed. Even the Soul of Ravnica is still drawing you at least one card late in the game and filling you back up with gas.
Okay, here's the problem I have. Mana. Is that when I look at a card, the first thing I do when I look at a card and I get excited, to check my excitement, I go, okay, hang on. What does this card do that excites me? And is there already a card that does it better? And when you look at the Titans, for the most part, there isn't another card that does what the Titans do better than the Titans. There's nothing that does what Sun Titan does. There's no other creature I know of that gets you a free lightning bolt every turn. Grave Titan, which in my opinion is one of the weaker of the Titans, even though a lot of people disagree with me, is still an amazing, token generator. And when you look at these guys, it's like, okay, so the green soul, Garrick does that way better. Like, any number of Garrick's does that way better, right? And then you look at the white soul, and it's like, okay, do I want this, where I have to pay the 5 mana to get that effect every single turn? Or do I want something like Heliod's, or 6 mana, yeah, or do I want the flash enchantment from, Journey into Nyx, where it's just flash? Yeah, that's the one. Dictate of Heliod, where you creatures just get +2/+2. Or would I rather have something like Gisela, which will make my creatures deal double damage and protect me?
Or would you rather have something that could buff your entire team, give a first strike and lifelink, and can be done on your opponent's turn at instant speed?
Repeatable. We already had that though. It's what's the one? It's 6 mana, 1 time investment. All your creatures have double strike and lifelink.
True conviction.
There we go. One time effect for the same amount of mana.
But does it give it a buff?
Phrasing?
Double strike is a buff.
No, does it give it a physical butt?
A butt buff? You gotta pay extra for that at the massage parlor.
Chewy, what are your thoughts on this soul versus titan debate?
To be perfectly honest, I think this is a non-starter. Because obviously the titans are better. Because obviously the titans should never have been printed in the first freaking place. So, of course the Titans are better. Now, better for the game? I'm pretty sure that would be the Souls. Because they're not stupid and broken. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
Well, that put it, in perspective.
Alright.
I mean, now, individually, of course, you could nitpick one or the other. Like, when you brought up the Grave Titan versus the Soul of Zendikar, I was like, oh, damn it, they're both good. I give up. So that's why I was quiet during the
whole thing. Just comparing them, like, individually against, like, their respective, like, match, I guess you would go with, they do fare off a lot better. Like, even with, like, say, the Soul of Sandalar versus the Inferno Titan. Well, granted, the Inferno Titan can kill your opponent a lot quicker. I can't really knock a 6/6 first strike. Even without the ability, a 6/6 first strike, just, in my opinion, just, like, amazing. I love the effect alone.
Oh, yeah.
And then the option that I get to burn my opponent for 3 and potentially hit one of his dudes is just gravy. That's a card that I would still play. I would still play Inferno Titan as well, but I could easily see like a debate between the two being something of interest. Between the blue Titan and the blue soul, Yeah, I can see us sitting back and arguing for days about which one sucks worse.
Well, obviously the Frost Titan is worse because it doesn't draw you a card.
Yeah, but 7 mana for a card, like, dude.
It also doesn't fly.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to. It taps down it would tap the blockers, it would... and it protects itself. It has this weird pseudo-hexproof bullshit.
Alright, yeah. Then after
it freezes
the...
people, damn it.
Alright, then after the trigger's resolved, I'm just gonna use the Soul's Identity card to make a chump beast. And if I have enough mana, I'll just make two beasts and then block both.
So you got all that extra mana and you're using it on 2/3/3s?
If I'm playing Mono Green and I have no other cards in my hand, yeah. But you
okay. Whatever makes you feel better.
I mean, that also says, like, okay, your deck's running out of gas at that point. Like, I mean, yes, if it's the only thing you have on the field and you have mana, sure, that's great. But, I mean, you should have a backup plan besides, okay, I'm going to pump a ton of mana into my soul.
You know what the backup plan for a Soul of Zendikar is? Is having doubling season out. That's what the backup is. That's when he becomes good. Because it's like, oh, now I pay 5 mana and I get 2 3/3 beasts. Or like parallel lives and doubling season. I pay 5 mana and I get 3 3/3 beasts. So it's like at that point, it's not really the Soul of Zendikar. You could have done this with anything that would have made you a 3/3 beast token. But just the fact that you have these two enchantments that's, you know, doubling or quadrupling the amount of like beast you're getting out of it. The Soul of Zendikar in and of itself, like 5 mana for a 3/3, just like Eric said, I could get a 3/3 beast basically from like anywhere. Like what was it? I could pay like, what was it? A green and a white and get a 3/3 centaur. I could drop down Garrick and just pump out 3/3s all day without having to ever look at another like counter.
They're usually it's like party favors as it is.
I was gonna say, if you're polite and ask your opponent nicely, they might give you a beast and blow up one of your things with a beast within.
Exactly. Sometimes you just get a 3/3 beast for free. Sometimes you get a 3/3 elephant because your opponent decided he wanted to play a Terracidon. 3/3s just randomly show up in green. They're literally just like all over the place. So
Don't ruin this. Will wants to spend 10 mana for 2 3/3s.
Hey, and you know what? I'm going to be doing it twice because I got like 2 of them over the weekend. So I'm going to try that out.
Soon. Oh, now I see where all this comes from.
So that's why
y'all... It all makes sense now.
The best part was that my roommate gave me his because he didn't want it.
That should have been a sign right there.
If that wasn't a sign, I don't know what is.
I think the roommate won that transaction.
Say I will. I'm gonna be popping him in my weird token, my giant token making deck. So I can't completely make fun of Will here. But
oh yeah, he's gonna slide right into Justani.
Phrasing.
Yeah, but I'm like I can see him being in a deck where you're using him for tokens. But like if you're using him in a deck where you plan on abusing tokens with like populate or reach the redeemed or whatever, then go right ahead. You're in green. You can ramp to 10 by turn what 4 anyway. It doesn't matter. But in the same token, it's like you're still going to be spending 10 mana for 2 3/3. So unless you're doing something else of importance, you're really just kind of like wasting roughly 3 turns worth of mana to make something that you could have probably have gotten for a hell of a lot cheaper.
Hmm. Well, in 1 year from now, we'll be doing our M15 look back review. So I guess we'll have plenty to talk about then. For now, we need to keep this train rolling. We're done with community. Next up, we're going into our strategy segment, and we're going to look at all 5, 6 new legends from N15. Stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back.
Was that the sound of William choking on a sliver hive lord?
Yeah.
Phrasing. Yeah.
Phrasing, definitely for that.
Six? Oh my.
With M15, we have the return of 6 brand new, awesome, legendary creatures. One of which I actually got to, she helped carry me to my 4-1 finish at the pre-release and won me second place, which is really awesome. So the first one we're going to end up talking about is Avacyn, Guardian Angel.
Mm.
Now, Avacyn's a little smaller this time around. 2 triple white, legendary angel, flying vigilance. She's a 5/4, so she's the pocket Avacyn. 1 and a white, prevent all damage that would be dealt to another target creature this turn by sources of the color of your choice. 5 and 2 white. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to target player this turn by sources of the color of your choice. And the first thing I want to go ahead and the first thing I want to get out of the way is that flavorfully, this actually does make sense. Like, I remember one of the things people were talking about when they saw the new episode was, holy crap, this is horrible. And yeah, she's not a great magic card. But like, everyone's got the image of the, oh my god, everything's indestructible, Avacyn. And for some of them, it's hard to make that bridge, right? But what you have to remember is that with the Avacynian magic on Innistrad, it's all based on the balance, right? Like, the more dire the situation is for the humans, the stronger Avacyn and her magic becomes. Until things start to balance out more, and humans are no longer on the brink of extinction. And Avacyn restored, the humans are fighting back, things are a lot more balanced now, so Avacyn's naturally going to be weaker. Flavorfully, makes sense. Card-wise...
Look at this long-haired Vorthosi hippie here.
Well, what can I... Wait, hippie?
I couldn't think of a better word. I'm sorry. This is short. Yes, hippie.
Yeah, I see Will just now wandering through a field talking about living guild packs and whatnot. It feels right.
Well, for the moment, we have temporarily lost Eric. Does
Eric
have... Okay, I'm going... Eric is back online. Well,
Eric Skype. Left because you were too busy trying to tell everybody about how you loved Avacyn.
I do love Avacyn. I recognize that she is not a good card or a great card. Her abilities are really overcosted, except for maybe the prevent damage to another creature. The fact that she can't protect herself is really annoying, as I found out over the weekend, because then you can't really swing with her if they have a bigger dude out. But what she brings to the table is that she actually has a very interactive political aspect to her. A lot of what I would do when I would play Atalia is I would go, wow, I wish I could just help people out here. Like, I wish I could use her to give you life or to protect some of your things. And she can, but it's like a tap thing. And then you have to decide, well, I can use it to save your creature or I can keep her up to save my creature. At least the great thing I love about Avacyn, though, is that she lets me have that political interactivity with everyone else. And is it dropping Eric again? Oh, no, it's kind of... It's
I fall off the call for 5 minutes, and I come back to hear Will try and justify a card that he admits sucks.
It's not that she's not sucks, it's that she's not a great card. I think she's actually just fine.
I think we also got... We're spoiled with Avacyn. Like you said before, indestructibility for everything was pretty damn good. So to see this now... The prevent damage, prevent damage effects aren't always the most popular in EDH, but it could be a nice bit player, and like you said, politically it could be fun to run around with. You know, I could see her hanging out in a Zedru deck, helping people out, just doing kind of bit pieces here and there, but I mean, I would not feel the compunction to run her as a commander by any means.
I'm gonna say what I said when we were doing our Rivals Duel coverage of these things. This Avacyn is the kind of card that someone looks at when they are first getting into EDH, and they look through their card library, and they just see that they have an Avacyn Guardian Angel, and they're just like, oh, this would be really cool to make a deck around, and it's their first EDH deck. And then as soon as they know how to play, they never make a deck out of something like her ever again.
Or in my case, they never stop. Okay, so what kind of decks do we imagine actually being built around Avacyn?
I don't.
For those of us who actually care to be fun and imaginative.
Bad ones? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll take the bait here. I have a deck that's all about protection. Literally, someone just called it the condom the other day.
Oh, wow, that's really good.
Yeah.
Damn.
But it is all protection from everything you could think of. Artifacts, green, blue, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of it is red direct damage or black direct damage. I could slot Avacyn in there pretty easily. She could give one of my creatures a protection or prevent damage from something they don't have. That's just a slot for her. It's a fun deck. It's not meant to be very competitive, but she could definitely have a home there.
Yeah.
Sorry, so you're saying Skype doesn't want me hearing you talk about Avacyn.
So you're saying that you'll only play with Avacyn if you have a condom?
Phrasing.
What did I just walk back in on?
This episode is not safe for the general public to consume. As a disclaimer, we at Commander Cast highly recommend that you don't play this play any of our episodes at work without some sort of ear protection.
Yeah, like an ear condom.
I think he means condom.
I knew it was going there.
So, long story short, will
too
I be
late.
Will I be playing Avacyn? Yes. Will I be playing her in Kalia? No. Well, maybe maybe my budget version online, but that's about it.
She's so bad you won't even put her in a deck where you get to play her for free.
Except online, where that's my rule. Okay, so, the next commander we have is Jaleera, Master Polymorphist. She costs 3U, Legendary Human Wizard. For 2U and tap, sack another creature, you polymorph. Reveal a card from the top of your library to reveal a non-legendary creature card. Put that card onto the battlefield and the rest go on the bottom in a random order. And she happens to be a 2-2. Which is fine. Okay, guys, so...
She also kind of looks like David Bowie. I want to throw that out there immediately here. Did anyone else get that?
I didn't, but now that I have, I can't stop.
Yep. Hang on, let me scroll. That is... not quite David Bowie.
Nah, it's,
a little... I mean, the hair color's a little... It came to me when I was writing a preview article for her that's going to be up later this week for my site, East Coast Commander. And that's just what jumped out at me. I needed something to hook onto. So it's now Bowie themed.
Might be closer to Ziggy Stardust.
But
that is Bowie. No.
And Jonathan, don't think we didn't hear that shameless plug there. To
oh,
go
come
over
on.
To
I needed,
your...
you know I wanted to do a shameless plug. Come on now.
Now, if you want to hear what my Mana Pool co-host Brian has to say, he talked about it on an episode I don't remember.
All right.
I really want it to feel like a show for a second, so just, you know.
All right, so Jonathan, you tell us, how do you see Jaleera, and what kind of decks do you see spring up around her?
For Jaleera, I mean, I don't really, the only polymorph effect you see in EDH usually is Proteus Staff. So she could go, and she can't even hit your opponent's creatures, so that's a knock against her. What I'm seeing for her is, if you build a blue token deck, if you want to put her at the helm, throw a lot of tokens in there, morph them out, get even more token makers. I'm thinking Chasm Skulker. He's a fun one to throw in there now. Large blue creatures that can just basically sacrifice tokens. Because you don't want to be throwing all your creatures away in the graveyard. Maybe some ETB triggers too. You use it once, sack them, recur them later. Stuff along those lines. She seems like she will be fun and not exactly a mono blue general that's going to be really oppressive.
Now, Eric, I know that you and Noel talked about this on Rivals, though. You want to go ahead and kind of reiterate what you said there?
Yeah, basically, I kind of disagree with John in that I've seen the Talrand Mono Blue Polymorph deck, and it's a deck built to break the Polymorph effect. Basically, you play Talrand, you get creatures out of him using nothing but spells, and then the only creatures in the deck are big giant things that you can cheat out with the polymorph effect, like Blightsteel Colossus, Ulamog, etc. So, having experienced that, I totally see Jaleera being played either as the general in that polymorph deck, or as one of the creatures in the Talrand polymorph deck. And in either of those cases, it's very, very good. The other thing that she's really great for is like a Mariki Reberate deck or Rubina Soulsinger where you're stealing your opponent's creatures and then you're just turning them into more value for you. The way I see her working is that she's going to be a creature that is going to be completely underwhelming or completely busted. And I don't really see her fitting somewhere in the middle. She's always going to be on one of the extremes. She's either going to be a card that you don't care about at all, or that you have to kill instantly.
All right, so going on to the next guy, Chewy, how about you introduce this guy to us?
Wait a minute, who's the next guy?
Omnixilus Unshackled.
Oh, we're going color.
Break these chains.
Yeah. Why can I not find him?
Okay.
Because I can't read. Hey, Calvin's back! And I'm just about to talk about the black creature. Oh, no, wait, no, you're the red guy. Never mind, my bad. Okay, so Omnixilus Unshackled. For 4 black, he's a 4/4 legendary demon with flying and trample. Whenever an opponent searches his or her library, that player sacrifices a creature and loses 10 life, not or. And whenever another creature dies, he gets a +1/+1 counter. This is stupid.
This guy is the bomb!
That's the guy that William needs to stick into his, whatchamacallit, deck.
Stick into a lot of things.
Ooh. Already did it, actually. He was one of the cards I got in my first Seagull pool. And he's actually the first card to ever actually make me say, okay, I finally have to cut a chroma.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, a chroma, for the longest time, was just the pet card for me in the Kalia deck. Like, I can't cut a chroma. She's got pro red, she's got pro black, you know, she's great in defensive, she's great attacker. Omnixus just straight up kicked her out. Tossed her on the curb, even.
This guy is so vicious. He's like, none of the other legendaries, except for maybe the five color one, are in even the same ballpark as him.
Yeah, like, I've seen people scoop the Stranglehold before, and this guy, is there any way to describe him other than...
devastating?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Incredible? Awesome.
When they spoiled him, I really, really wanted to make a Jund Hate Bears deck, and the curve was gonna top out with Rurikthar and Obnixilus.
That sounds incredibly vicious.
Yep.
So, I mean, we know this guy is beastly, because, I mean, searching in EDH is second nature, but do you think they could have tweaked that damage value to make him a little bit more palatable? What do you think about five? We cut it in half.
I think at five, he's still playable, but he loses a lot of the sudden impact that you get. Like, a lot
I mean, 10 is just, 10 is, I mean, 4 hits, 4 searches, you are out.
Yeah, I think the thing about the 10 versus 5 question is that with 5, people feel like they can get away with searching a little more often. And if they're searching for 2 or 3 cards, chances are one of those cards is going to be a way to deal with Omnixus so they don't keep getting dealt all this damage. With the 10 life, it's like, okay, if I want to search out an answer for Omnixus, I really need to dig my heels in because this guy just ate a quarter of my life.
Yeah, exactly. If it had been 5 life, you would have been like, okay, I can search like 3 times. When it's at 10 life, nobody wants to search even once.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so one of the great things is that I love the interaction he has with Tempt with Discovery. Because with Tempt with Discovery, you actually search for each player, and those are separate searches. If someone casts Tempt with Discovery and you just flash in the Omnixus with, say, oh, I don't know, Court of Calling reprint, suddenly it becomes, yeah, everyone searches out for lands and you just die.
actually, that's not true.
Something about that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, no, it's only, each opponent's gonna search out one land. You're basically neutering Tempt with Discovery because you're never gonna get those extra lands that other players gonna go for.
Okay, no, I misread that. It says the effect happens simultaneously for each one.
The other thing is because, even if that wasn't the case, because it says search for a land, you can always opt out of searching when it designates a specific card.
Well, no, you can't, because you have,
no.
You can fail to find, but you still have to search.
Nope. Right. I think that if you're announcing that you're failing to find, you don't even have to search your library.
No, you do. That's in the
rules. Yeah, you're still searching. Yeah, you still have to shuffle.
Really?
Yes.
Ouch.
And it's not even a may. It says for each opponent who searches their library, you have to search your library for a land.
Damn.
Let's see, I'm trying to read the exact...
That's why Fertilid works with Omnixilus so well. Cause he forces a search on, any player.
Yeah, Fertilid!
Fertilid, I mean, did work beforehand. Now he's chumming it up with the big boys.
Then the effect happens again for you a number of times equal to the number of funds who accepted. No, that works the way I thought it did. Then the effect happens again for you a number of times equal to the number of opponents who accepted. So if 3 people search out for libraries off of your attempt with Discovery, then you get the search for 3 different times for land.
Right, well, you get the initial land, then however many people search, you get a land also in addition to that. So the top, like, if you're in a 4-player game, is 4 lands.
Yeah, for each player, you search your library and put a land to play. So I play Tempt with Discovery, and then Eric says, hey, William, this happens. Now I feel sad. So I'm going to search my library for a land to resolve resolve my spell. And then I'll ask Calvin, hey, Calvin, do you want to get a land? I don't think you do. Calvin says, yeah, I'll get a land. Oh, I have to search my library again for a land. Chewie says, I'll get one too. I have to search my library again for a land. And then Jonathan says, and you know what? I'm going to be nice and not... No, I'm going to go grab a land too. Suddenly I'm dead because I've searched 4 times for lands.
Yeah, in the ruling here, it says that the effect happens again for you a number of times equal to the number of opponents who accepted.
Hey. That's pretty nasty.
Who has two thumbs and knows his rule judgments? This guy, Bob Kelso. Nice to meet you.
So hold on a second. You cast a search. Are you saying that somebody else has Obnixilus?
Yes. Someone else has Obnixilus, and then I cast Temp with Discovery. Or I have Obnixilus, and Eric cast Temp with Discovery.
You're not the one who controls him because you are not casting Tempt if someone else has Ob out.
Because I was about to say, like, if that's the case, then you're just a dumbass because you've basically merged yourself for some basics.
Exactly. Or someone just got the drop on you because they have, like, Teferi and they could flash him out and they have, like, Amulet of Vigor or not Vigor or something.
I mean, they would have to flash him out before
you wanted to go home badly.
Before the spell resolves, yeah. Like, Temple Discovery, response, flashing Obnixilus.
Right.
Now he's dead. And everyone else...
Or unless you happen to be like one of those people who just happen to play like a Platinum Angel or something. Then you're fine.
Or you're playing in lore room, in which case now you're down to regular life totals. Alright, so Calvin, how about you go ahead and talk about our new red legend?
How's about I don't? Okay, fine. let's see, what's this? Kirkish? I'm guessing that's what it's Kirkish?
It's actually pronounced Steve.
Steve?
Steve from
Accountant. Steve from Accountant. Hey, no, that would be Bob from Accountant. It's Kirkish Onik Ancient?
Onake
Ancient? Whatever. It's an orc, it's a spirit, it's a 4/3 legendary creature. It costs 2 colors and a double red. And it has an ability that says, whenever you activate an ability of an artifact, if it isn't a mana ability, you may pay red. And if you do, copy that ability. You may choose new targets for that copy. The
he's a Rings of Brighthearth with stupid tusks.
Yes, he's a Rings of Brighthearth with stupid tusk on it, where you have to pay red as opposed to, what is it, 2 colorless, I think it is, for rings?
Mm-hmm. It's a Rings of Brighthearth for artifacts that you can always get because he's your general.
So guys, what do you think about Kirkash? Because I'm actually not too sure what to make of him.
I really like him. I like, really, really like him. I don't know if I'm ever gonna play him. I don't know if he's the kind of general that I would build a deck around, but I'm very, very happy that this card got printed. I think that having a really, really powerful red artifact general is awesome, because there was the slow bad red artifact stacks that were kind of okay, and then there was Bosch that was okay but super expensive. Having Kirkash out there is like a less resource intensive, really cool option for that, and I think that there's going to be a lot of surprise, like he just breaks your back out of nowhere because you did not see the win coming with Kirkash. And I think that it's really awesome that there's a red legend that is able to generate value too, because obviously mono red decks have a lot of trouble getting that. So the fact that we're able to get additional value by using this guy is pretty great.
Alright, so Eric, what kind of artifacts do you see being staples in Kirkash?
The first ones that come to mind for me, obviously Staff of Domination is pretty big. And Trading Post probably equally huge in this deck, but you can just play stuff like that you wouldn't initially think of being of how good it would be, but like just a simple Wayfarer's Bauble turns into getting 2 lands to the battlefield. Expedition Map now gets you a Valakut and a Care Keep or an Ancient Tomb or something like that. Blasting Station now blows stuff up for 2 damage. And it's just like little things that you just build up such a huge amount of advantage with. And,
Altar creates infinite mana?
No.
Maybe? No?
You can't.
Oh, that's right, that's right, that is a mana ability.
Yep.
A mana ability.
That being said, what you can do that would be busted is play creatures like, I don't know, Kiki Jiki, or Planeswalkers like Koth or Chandra, and then just run Liquid Metal Coating in your deck and then turn them into artifacts whenever you want to double up their abilities.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, that's Kirkash.
Yep.
Yeah, my favorite thing about him is the fact that he gives artifact-based theme deck. Or, well, he has the option to bring artifact-based theme deck to a color that's not blue, white, or black. Not saying that we don't have other creatures in the other colors that can't do blue, white, or black, but it's that they can't do artifacts outside of blue, white, and black. But for the most part, when you hear legendary creature that's involved with artifacts, first thing that comes to my mind is like Shroom, Sin's Triplets, what was
Sidri.
That other? Yeah, so it's like, you know, I just get like all these like, yeah, just got like all these like white, blue, black legends. And when it comes to red, red is usually the color that's usually stuck destroying the artifacts, which is kind of where we've always been at. You know, except for like, you know, the few people, like, except for the few cards like Slowbad and stuff like that. So it's nice to see like red getting a chance to expand its palette slightly to be able to have like an additional concept for, oh, instead of wanting to destroy all the artifacts, now I kind of want to keep some of them around so that I can actually use this thing. Now I might actually want to use like a card to steal your artifact creature with an activated ability on it so I can actually use that several times for myself.
Yeah, I was just trying to think of other cards for Kirkesh. A couple more that I came up with. Helm of Possession is huge because you can steal two of your opponent's creatures for the price of one. Mishra's Helix can now hold down two players' lands.
Mindslaver?
Mindslaver, take two turns. Goblin Charbelcher, deal a huge amount of damage to two separate targets. Mimic Vat, make two tokens. The list goes on and on and on.
Even with the current set, we've also got the Cursed Veil. You can activate that and get a chance to double up on your Planeswalker abilities.
Brittle Effigy, go ahead and hit an opponent's two creatures instead of one.
So here's one that you might actually...
Yeah.
I knew that's exactly what I was about to say to you, William. I could read the corniness coming out of your brain.
Make your things indestructible, and then make them
twice
more indestructible.
Well, I have a friend who runs that mono red artifact deck, and he's already enjoys playing it. To my friend Ryan, and we actually talked about Kirkesh yesterday, and he was very excited. He's run Slowbad right now, but I could see him switching over just because he's already getting all the value. I'm also thinking like a Mindstone, you're drawing two cards. Dreamstone,
yep.
Hedron, you're drawing three cards. I mean, you're drawing six cards off of that. Like, just all these little effects, like you guys are saying, everything just gets a little bit better with a splash of red. So he will definitely be solid to see out there.
This is a deck that I would actually run Bludgeon Brawl as a win condition in.
That actually is Ryan's win condition. Bludgeon,
yep.
Brawl, Volshock, Battlemaster.
Alright, so the last one of the monocolor generals that we have is Yasin, the Wanderer Bard. Eric, do you want to go ahead and read him?
Oh man, why did I have to get this guy? So Yasin, the Wanderer Bard, looks very cool because he's got an eye patch and he seems to be summoning a giant centipede into battle. But he is a 2/3 for 3, it's 2 and a green. He's a legendary human rogue, and he has an ability where you pay his mana cost and tap him to put a verse counter on Yasin, the Wanderer Bard. Search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to the number of verse counters on Yasin. Put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. Oh man, I wish this guy was good.
Isn't this like a Hibernation's End you have to pay for that can get bolted?
Exactly.
Yeah, he's slow.
He is very slow. And the problem is that in, as a general, his recast value is next to nothing because you have to start building up those burst counters all over again.
Yeah.
And that's really what kind of breaks him in half for me, that makes him pretty much unplayable. But I will say I did figure out the one situation where I did want to play him.
But
if you're... What?
He laughed at you.
The one situation where you would want to play him.
The one situation where you do want to play him is if you're playing a Celestia deck. And you're just throwing him in as one of the 99. Because in that one drop slot, you can get something like Mother of Runes or a Sarah Ascendant. So you're already getting value at the one drop slot. And then at the two drop slot, you're getting like Hate Bears, like Grand Abolisher or Spirit of the Labyrinth. So the fact that he fetches weenies in the Celestia deck is much less of a downside because the white weenies are just so much better than any other colors. But,
Family show here, family show.
But, other than that, I don't think he's any good.
I mean, go ahead, John.
Yeah, if these were 1/1 counters that were triggering off, I mean, he'd be absolutely broken. Cause, I mean, they obviously put these verse counters in to slow him down, cause there's nothing else besides, like, a proliferate to keep putting those on. But, yeah, play it slow. But I think that's a good point to have at least small creatures he will be able to get up. So if you are playing a deck that's looking for something like a Mother of Runes, he could be okay to just have around. But geez, I don't want to have to be the one playing a very, very slow general like that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the one thing I have to like throw in there about him is the thing that I personally disliked about him myself is the fact that it's equal to the converted mana cost is equal to the number of verse counters. So it's not like number of verse counters or less. So once you get to a certain number of verse counters, you either A, have to find some convoluted way of removing verse counters from him so you can activate him to look for something, or you have to kill him and then start from scratch. There's pretty much like no other real way of actually using him. It's not like you're ever going to get to 4 and just be happy and stay there. Cause once you activate him, like, up 4 is gone. He's now giving you 5 or bigger, depending on what you have on the field. Like, if you've got something that's proliferating or doubling seasons or whatever the case may be. And, like, once his verse counters.
I don't know about you guys. I hate it when I'm forced to start getting bigger creatures.
Yep. And it's like, once he, like, gets to a point where his, like, verse counters are bigger than whatever the biggest creature in your deck is. It's like, oh, now I've got to sacrifice him and start searching out for all the 1/1s. But if I've had a chance to activate him, like what was it, Eric? You said you have some decks that's like tops out at 5?
Yeah, exactly.
So if you had this guy in there and you activated this ability 5 times to be able to get your 5/5s or get a creature with a converted mana cost of 5, once he gets to 6, do you really think it's going to be late in the game enough for you to want to start looking for 1/1s again? Or 1-mana guys? Or 2-mana guys or whatever?
Yeah, but I can tell sure, the commander players are so freaking spoiled. Because you just got 5 free creatures and you're complaining that you can't get a 6. What the hell?
No, I'm not complaining that I can't get a 6. I'm not complaining that I can't get a 6.
We like deals.
No, I'm not complaining that I can't get a 6. Because my viewpoint is like if I've activated this ability 5 times and I've already gotten 5 creatures. And
why didn't you win?
The top of my mana curve? Well, yeah, exactly. Why am I now at the process where I have to now either kill him and start looking for 1-mana, like 1-mana dudes, 2-mana dudes, and 3-mana. Like, if I get this ability 5 times in a row, I should have won this game already, right? I mean, is this what is it? He's a 2/2 just sitting out there, doing nothing, but just churning out dudes? No, 2/3. He's just sitting out there. No one's pathed him. No one's attacked him. No one's doom-bladed this guy. No graphics. What's going on here?
What's going on is that for the first few turns, people really aren't going to take him seriously. Like, everyone's gonna have the mentality of, okay, I'll let him get his stupid dorks or whatever, then before he gets anything big out, I'll just shoot the thing. Well, the thing is, then something bigger comes along, like someone else plays bigger stuff, or you just play other bigger stuff, and then those eat the removal.
Wow. Must play with such nice players, William, because I don't know a single Magic player in Ottawa who would look at a card on the table, see that it says search your library, and let it live. People will, like, Shattering Spree a Wayfarer's Bauble here. Just, like, you don't get to shuffle your library. I don't know what you're going to pull out of there.
So everything that happens in Canada that's evil is just on the Magic table, I guess.
Yeah, see, Canadians are really polite until we play a game. Hockey, for example.
I'm right with you. I play, so.
Wait a minute. I just thought of the guy who would let it live.
Mm.
The guy playing Obnixilis.
I almost had that situation at the pre-release, actually. The guy had 2 friggin' Yasins, and he just killed the Omnexus on the spot and just kept on searching. Like, ain't no thing.
Oh.
Like, I thought I had him, too! Like, he had 2 of the damn things!
Yeah, nope.
But yeah. That, in a way, though, that actually does kind of speak to the power that Yasin has potentially. Like, if they don't deal with it, he does win you the game. The problem is that he does have that fragility, so you have to find ways to protect him.
What he is he's like when you reach the end of the action movie and the bad guy has set the nuclear bomb to the timer, except the bad guy accidentally set the timer in months instead of minutes. It's like, wow,
I think it might take a while.
I think we got time to, in
The Dark Knight Returns. 6 months.
Yusen is the bomb in the back of the truck. Like, eventually it's probably gonna blow up, but it's not gonna actually kill anyone. Bruce Wayne already ejected, what?
I hate that movie so much!
Because it's terrible.
Yeah. My girlfriend likes it for some reason, I don't know.
I like Bane.
Yeah, it would've been better if it wasn't just the first movie all over again.
You thought Yusen was your ally!
You thought that searching would help you, but you merely adopted searching.
I was born into searching.
I play blue.
I play Sisse as my general.
Oh my god, yeah. Sisse makes Yusen cry. Yusen, like, trains all night to try and be Sisse one day.
Alright, so our final legendary here is the first original multicolored legend in the set. It's Sliver Hive Lord. What was that again? The Sliver Hive Lord.
You said the original multicolor.
The original multicolored creature of the core sets.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was about to say, like, wait a second, weren't we, like, didn't we get, Nicol Bolas? Wasn't he, like, multicolored? But, no, you said multicolored creature, so I'm letting that slide.
Yeah, because we even have Garruk in this set. But, yeah, Sliver Hive Lord. For white, blue, black, red, green, all your powers combined create the legendary 5/5 Sliver that says Sliver creatures you control have indestructible. Guys, Sliver deck?
My buddy, who is a fan of the site and who works with me, was actually... He said this better than anyone else has, and it was, I just showed him Sliver Hive Lord for the first time when it was spoiled, and he just looked at it and he goes, indestructible. That is the last thing that Sliver's needed.
Right?
And it's just your Slivers too. My buddy lucked out, we were just talking to a guy and he said, yeah, I got the Sliver Hive Lord. He just gave it to my friend. Like, really? Holy crap. Originally, it was just going to be, hey, I'll trade you this herb orb for that Sliver Hive Lord. No, he just gave him the Hive Lord straight up. Like, what the fuck?
You do live in the friendliest magic community, Will. No one kills any creatures. People just give each other cards.
You can play stuff like crappy Avacyn and still participate in games.
So, yeah, Sliver deck, 5 colors, probably.
Well, otherwise it's not legal, so yeah.
No, it's indestructible. That's a thing.
Yep.
I don't think any one of us is happy about this card.
I am.
Why?
Well, I have to...
Do you play Slivers?
I've been wanting to play Slivers for a while, and no one around the store actually plays the Sliver deck. So even though my friend got one and he's going to build the Sliver deck, I'm actually going to try and build the Sliver deck myself, too.
You guys want to be the two people at a table who are just like, oh, my creatures are helping your creatures. Let's just kill everyone else, then slug it out.
Later. Well, not at the same time. That would be unbearable.
Yes.
But no, actually, we got one of the, our readers called us out on the Facebook page. You can go ahead there and comment on our episodes and our articles there. Someone actually challenged us to build the ultimate Sliver deck with the Hive Lord as the general. So, gotta take the guy up on the challenge, man.
Well, you already screwed it up, because with the ultimate Sliver deck, Hive Lord isn't the general.
Well, he said Sliver Hive Lord as the general specifically, otherwise we do just go Sliver Overlord.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't mean Sliver Hive Overlord can't be in the deck, though.
Yeah, so... but it still wouldn't be much better with the Overlord. But the one thing I would have to say about the Hive Lord is that I do kind of like the fact that it only does the indestructibility thing. And the main reason I'm going with that is because, to me, it kind of makes it appear, flavor-wise, to be a male Sliver, if such a thing actually existed.
Nah, it's a queen.
I can understand a female version pumping out Sliver tokens left and right, or searching up more Slivers. But the male one? Nope, he just sits around and makes sure everybody's safe.
Men, good for meat shields and nothing else.
Okie doke. So with that, I think we are all done. So with that, yeah, like I said, we're all done. Next up, we're going to go into technology, and to wrap things up, we're each going to share a couple of cards that we're really excited about from our set. You know, the cards that we consider our top picks going into the set. Stay tuned, everyone. We're heading into the home stretch. All right, we all ready to go into our final segment?
No.
Your mom is ready for our final segment.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Does that get an ooh?
Ooh, I don't know what he's been saying.
Eric, did you say my mom or that I am mom?
No, I said your mom. Are you my mother? Hang on. Are you my mother, Will? Like, should I be calling you mom?
I mean, I'm not against it. I've always filled the team mom role, but...
I don't like where this is going. So we're about to go into the next segment.
There we go. That's how I get everyone back on track.
I have to pee.
You should have gone before I left.
What I really meant was I just peed from that part of the conversation. So.
As we round things out, instead of going into a smorgasbord of repetitive, this is what this card does, and doing every single card in the file. Instead, we're just going to talk about two, maybe three cards each that we're actually really excited about. To start with, I'm going to start with what's apparently a classic, Restock. For 3 and 2G, you get to return 2 cards from your hand, from your graveyard to your hand, and then you exile Restock. So it's super regrowth. This is actually a reprint. One that I actually
represent. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, like 2 cards for 1 in green, double regrowth. You're not going to be able to get Broken Shenanigans out of it because it actually does exile itself. But this is a card that you'd think they would have reprinted before now, and no, it hasn't.
Right? Like when I saw it was in the set, I was like, "Oh, they're reprinting it again." No, they're not reprinting it again. They're reprinting it for the first time. I could have sworn that I'd seen it before in the new card frame, but no, I wanted it to be reprinted so bad that my brain convinced me that it had been reprinted, and my brain is a dick.
He just couldn't picture himself living in a world where Restock hadn't been reprinted.
Right? So thank goodness they finally went and did it.
Alright, who wants to go next?
I'll go next. I'm going to say it right now, this is probably going to be the single card that gets the most EDH play out of this entire set, just because we've already seen this effect before, and we know how powerful it is, and we know how good it is. Reclamation Sage. It's an uncommon. 2 colorless and a green for a 2/1. When Reclamation Sage enters the battlefield, you may destroy target artifact or enchantment. This is an Indrik Stomp Howler that you can get back with Sun Titan.
Ah, the value. It's so delicious.
It's Elf Tribal. It is, it's so recurrable. It comes down early enough that it's still relevant in stopping, like, turn one Soul Rings and stuff like that. It's so good.
Yeah, well, Eric, I say that hits on a lot of different levels, which is just awesome. My card, actually, I'd like to, preview Spirit Bonds. Spirit Bonds is an enchantment for 1 colorless, 1 white. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay 1 white. If you do, a 1/1 white spirit token with flying is onto the battlefield, and you could pay 1 white and 1 colorless to sack a spirit, and target non-spirit creature gains indestructible until the end of turn. An awesome indestructibility giver, very flavorful. I mean, everybody's got a spirit protector now. This is the kind of thing you want to see on the field. I mean, instead of like the Soul of New Phyrexia where it's more of a splashy effect, this is just incrementally gets good. It goes in Spirit Tribal well, token deck, you're getting a spirit attached to everything, and it will keep your stuff on the board. So I'm very excited to be plugging this into any white X deck or just mono white in general.
When this card was, spoiled, the first thing I thought is, oh god, in Taste of Deck, the spirits can protect or destroy now.
Ooh.
Ow.
Alright.
Just hit my hand.
Hey, dummy.
Hey, dummy.
Hey,
can I take one?
Yes.
I don't know if you guys have seen it. I haven't heard very much buzz about it, but there's this new card called Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth. It's a legendary land, and it turns all lands into swamps, in addition to their other types. I think this is going to be huge.
What? No.
Wow, that's unprecedented. Is there a card that precedes it that makes mana based on swamps? Because that would just be really cool. I'm wrong here.
I think there was that Magus of the Coffers cycle.
I don't know, guys. I mean, all it does is turn your stuff into swamps, and I don't know. Does it even tap for mana by itself?
No, you don't get it, Will. The really powerful part is that it makes your opponent's land swamp. This enables swamp walk.
Oh, I guess Yeldra can get by on block now.
I'm going to drop it in my Sulcanar the Swamp King deck. Bam! Which sadly doesn't exist, but...
I'm just happy to see their $5 TCG mid.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Got one of those in my Seal Pool, went straight in my Karador deck, which was sorely lacking.
Yeah, all joking aside, I'm really glad that they reprinted this to make it easier for people to get, because it's one of those cards that everybody freaking wants.
Actually, there are a number of reprints in this set that actually people really freaking want. Like, they've got the enemy pain lands in here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't think anyone's listed the super obvious modern reprint.
Do you want to narrow that down?
Court of Calling, for
okay,
sure.
Okay, that's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, that's the narrowing down.
Alright, so who's got another card?
Calvin.
That would be me. So let's see here. The card I want to actually go ahead and say that I want to talk about that I actually kind of find the most interesting out of the whole thing is Goblin Kaboomist. Mainly because I love the flavor. I love the idea of the landmine concept. And I really just want to get a copy of them and stick one of the, what was it? Remember before when they had, the ring cycle?
Yes.
The equipment.
Like Ring of Polonia. Like
ring of this and ring of. Ring of random location.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get this and slap a ring on him. So that way, at the beginning of my upkeep, I can put a +1/+1 counter on him. And then he can just go ahead and keep planting landmines for me for the remainder of the game.
And this is how we found out that Calvin proposed to a goblin.
You know, Calvin, if
well,
you
if
liked
I
it,
didn't love it, I wouldn't have put a ring on
him. Beat me to it.
Calvin, just be sure after you finish the game, you go over the field with a mind detector, because it's kind of dangerous.
Yeah, you say the wrong thing, tell me, looks fine in that dress. It's all over, man.
That too.
Okay, I have to go next, because my next dude's a goblin as well. Goblin Rabble Master.
Yeah. Rabble.
Oh, my keep calling it Rabble on.
Rabble, Rabble, Rabble.
So good, and the alternate art for the BioBox promo is so good, too. But this guy costs 3 mana. He makes hasty goblins that have to attack. One of his abilities is other goblin creatures you control attack each turn if able. At the beginning of combat on your turn. That means at the turn you play this guy, you get a token. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a 1/1 red goblin token with haste onto the battlefield. And whenever Goblin Rabble Master attacks, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn for each other attacking goblin. And it's a 2/2. This card is so good in so many decks, and not just Tribal Goblin. Like, this guy, if you're having more than one combat step, if you like playing tokens, if you like going into the red zone, this guy's just so awesome!
Actually, this is a good point for me to go ahead and say that, you know, everyone knows how I have, like, the 27 decks, one for each color, and I limit myself to one per deck. But lately, I've been thinking, well, what if I had one more deck, but it was a deck that was always changing? Like, the experimental deck. And the deck that I've got my eyes set on is actually the original Ib Half-Heart deck that Andy built way back in, like, the deck video I found.
Way back in forever?
Yeah, like 2011 forever. So, I'm actually going to end up... So, my current goal is to rebuild the Ib Half-Heart deck and just modify it from there with the current and the modern cards. And this guy goes right in there.
But we have Krenko now.
Why would I play Krenko when you can play Ib?
What was that? Is everybody okay?
That was me. I'm sorry. Had to sneeze. Had something stuck in my throat.
Suck up!
Oh my god.
Calvin, don't die on us.
Do we need to take you to the hospital? Like, I'm genuinely concerned about you now.
I don't know.
It's okay. It's fine. Like, no, I think I got it.
Yeah, you think you got it out, Calvin?
Brown nose.
Oh man.
That sounded better.
There we go.
I hate you all.
Oh man. No, it's fine. He wants to blow up his own mountains. It's cool.
It's cool. It's cool. It's fine.
Someone move on to the next card. He's soured me on goblins for the time being.
So, just for that, I'm going to go ahead and talk about a card that, you know, not only saved my bacon, but I got to try it out in EDH just this past weekend, and indeed saved my bacon yet again. Resolute Archangel.
Bacon.
For 5WW, you get a 4/4 Flying Angel that says when she hits the field, if your life total is lower than your starting life total, it becomes equal to your starting life total. So in other words, way to deal me all that damage with Purphoros, bro. Let me just get my angel out there and make it that much harder for you.
I'm already annoyed by this card. I haven't even played against it yet, and I'm already annoyed by this card.
That
didn't take long.
The amount of times that I just ripped off the land to drop this on turn 7 on time and just completely reset the clock during the sealed event last Sunday, that just broke the game open for me. Like, you play this angel, and suddenly, you're stable again. Suddenly, that looming 5/5 with trample that you were terrified of ain't no thing.
Guys,
this is the card that's going to force me to play Leyline of Punishment in my decks again.
I'm rolling out False Cure for this thing.
If you aren't annoyed by it yet, just picture this. I play Resolute Archangel. Does it resolve? Yes. In response to the trigger, I'm going to pay all but one life to my Necropotence.
See, that's one of the arguments for putting in Kalia, right? Like,
yep.
Like the decks like Kalia have a huge habit of just cannibalizing your life, which is why lifelink is such a premium ability for aggressive decks like that. And Resolute Archangel just says, yeah, you got all that for free. All the people that were trying to hate you out because you're playing this general, just don't even worry about that. For free.
Yeah, I might actually have to slide some more Mind Slavers into my deck, because if people are going to start doing that with this Angel and Necropotence, at least I can attempt to be like, okay, fine, you want to be a smartass. I'm taking your next turn, and you're going to go ahead and go all the way down.
And then we pair her up with Deadeye Navigator.
Or just run a shock.
I mean, I saw that one coming.
Like, yeah.
Just
like,
hold a
and,
shot.
Like, and in response, bolt.
In response, gut shot. No, no. Clutch play.
Bitch.
Hornet sting.
Hornet sting.
No.
There we go. Hornet sting.
Hobo.
Now see, if you actually want to do stuff like that, you play Skullcrack.
Alrighty.
Oh, there you go. That's one that actually isn't dumb. Okay, good job.
Okay, so who's going up next?
Ooh.
The ginger.
I think Chewy wants in on that.
Wait a minute, what's it? Oh, damn it. Hey, somebody look. Oh, no, I found it. I love this card for a variety of reasons. It's called Burning Anger. For 4 and a red, it's an enchant creature aura that says, enchanted creature has. Tap. This creature punches the hell out of a creature or player. I mean, deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player.
Same thing, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. I've always loved stuff like that. Like, I have an entire deck built around Fling, for God's sake. It's not an EDH deck, but, you know.
Oh,
that's what, yeah.
No, I get you. This thing's going to be stupid in my Animar Tribal Hydra deck.
Oh, God.
I'm already paying, like, 2 mana to drop 12-12s by mid-game. It's fantastic.
You know what deck is actually is just begging for this card to get played in?
Anything with Prophet of Perfects? Yep. Like Animar Ural. Tribal Hydra?
Nope, Ural.
Oh, Ural sucks.
My Ural now burns 5 damage to something until I get another enchantment. Then it's time for things to get real scary.
No, it gets horrible
because this is an enchantment. No, this is an enchantment, and we'll go on Ural. When you tapped it, it would do at least 7, right? Because Ural gets +2/+2 automatically when he's enchanted.
Yep.
Does he start as a 5/5?
Ural starts as a 5/5.
I believe
yeah.
so.
I thought he started as a 3/3.
No, he's a 5/5/5.
He's a beast.
Oh my god, you put him on and he burns stuff for 7? That's the worst.
Yep. And what was that one equipment, the red-green one, that when the creature attacks, it deals damage? Yeah, Mage Slayer. You put Mage Slayer on Ural, you enchant this, you swing. before Urel even deals combat damage, he deals Mage Slayer damage. You tap him if you already have Vigilance somehow or another, and now he's dealing damage for this enchantment and still doing combat damage. So ooh, basically, Urel gets to punch you in the face 3 times in one swing.
Don't forget to give him double strike too, so he's punching you four, just because why the hell not?
Why the hell not?
Of the twin gods and Gisella.
That bitch.
Urel wasn't broke enough. Now we have even more fun.
Yeah, so thanks. Now I don't like this card anymore. Screw you guys.
I think that was the goal when you said it, to just make you dislike it. So
I'm glad I just met Chewie and I'm already making him hate things he loves. This is a good start.
This is the beginning of a beautiful hatred.
Why isn't there a card called Beautiful Hatred? We need to get on this. Wizards, I know you're... Oh, wait, this is Commander Cast. Never mind.
No, this isn't Monday Night Magic where people actually listen to us.
Nobody listens to Monday Night Magic.
Wait.
Alrighty.
That means I'm nobody. Damn.
See?
Did William just insult himself?
I was gonna say, I could have told you that for free will.
You've beaten him down enough to that point now, I guess.
This is terrible. Everything about this is just awful. I love it.
Okay. William just turned into the court jester who loves his job.
He's Reek now. He's Theon Greyjoy.
Oh, no!
You did not! Stop fire!
Oh, that's bad.
All right, Jonathan, what's your second card?
All right, my other card, I am going with Torpor Orb number 2, Hushwing Griff. Ugh. Torpor Orb is a criminally underplayed card, at least in my opinion. I love it. It knocks all these ETB abilities out. Anything triggered, it's just nice to have a second one, even though it has legs, so it can die a little easier, but it's gonna stop a lot of shenanigans from happening, and I am grateful for that. So thank you, Hushwing Griff.
Yeah, going to my eventual Elish Norn Hate Bear deck.
This card is awesome, because they were just like, hey, what's the best Hate Bear we ever printed? Oh, it's probably Aven Mind Sensor, because of the flying and the flash. Alright, let's print that, but give it a different Hate Bear ability.
And ta-da! Hushwing Griff.
And it's a Griff! We haven't seen too many of those. Like, in Avacyn Restored, there were supposed to be like hundreds of them suddenly emerging from wherever they were, but we only got like the one.
Wait a minute, this thing's a Hippogriff. Are there any other Hippogriffs?
That's right. We're getting closer and closer to Hippogriff Tribal, so prepare yourselves.
Are we? Like, are there that many others?
Feldegriff, right? Are they not Hippogriffs?
I don't think
no,
so.
No, Feldegriffs.
Fine, just Griff Tribal. I'll set my sights lower.
Okay, let's see.
There's Razor Hippogriff.
Yeah, Razor Hippogriff is the other one. The other one.
Sorry, I got excited.
But then the blue one from Avacyn Restored is just the human knight, because it's not actually talking about the Griff.
Well, screw him. He didn't do anything. He's a fucking human. Excuse my language, but...
Yep, she is a woman.
If he's not going to be the right kind of Griff, I don't want to talk to him.
She is a woman, sir. She is a bitch.
Sorry.
Let's be proper here.
Sorry. Apologies. I'm just on a Griff-related anger. The hate-bear nature of Hushwing has really got me angry right now, so.
All right, excuse my attitude.
Oh, those Titans aren't looking so good now.
We'll move on.
All right, so who's got it next? So,
that would be me, sir. And the next card that I'm going to be talking about is something that I've actually kind of been looking forward to since I saw it was spoiled, and that is Necromancer's Stockpile. It's an enchantment. It's colorless and a black. You discard a creature card, and you get to draw a card. And the discarded card was a zombie card. You get to put a 2/2 zombie token onto the battlefield, tapped. And the main reason I want Necromancer's Stockpile is because I want to slide it right into my Belfdor to Defile deck. That is my zombie-themed Dredge EDH deck. And quite frankly, pretty much every creature in that deck is a zombie. So I'm going to be paying 2 mana, get a zombie, draw a card, and put a zombie in the graveyard so that when I do finally get to the mana to play Belfdor, I'll have more creatures in the graveyard to be able to just bring back.
Question.
Answer.
Yes, sir.
Noxious Ghoul?
Ooh, Noxious Ghoul.
Is that in that deck? Yeah. Because if not, then you have failed.
I'm pretty sure it is. Okay. It's one of those decks I've been like tuning for since when it's the first deck that I wrote about back in 2011 when I first started that Breach of the Face blog spot that I had.
Nice.
So it's a deck that I've been playing with and tweaking and playing with and tweaking for about 3 years now.
Nice.
It's one of my favorite decks. I love the fact that it's just like all mono black. Only thing in it that aren't zombies are dredge creatures, and the only reason they're in there is for the dredge. And I was even getting to a point where I was getting ready to take some of those mono black dredge creatures out, but I really needed a dredge, so I just kind of left them in. I just kind of like put them in as like, you know, like they kind of have to be here to make the deck work the way I want it to.
Oh yeah, the Necromancer Stockpile works great with dredge. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, and the thing is, I can even discard like a dredge card to the graveyard just to draw a card. But then in response of drawing a card, like, nope, I don't want to do it. I'm going to bring this dredge guy back from the graveyard to my hand instead and just mill myself a little.
Holy crap! So either way, it's a dredge.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, it just works for me either way.
That's going to be insane in Caridor.
Yep.
And here, the best thing I thought of was, oh, I can put in Olivia and discard Squee to draw a card once a turn.
You suck.
Kabook! Nobody.
Alrighty then. So, who hasn't had a second card? Looks like everyone's gotten a second one. So, I'll go ahead and round up our thirds, if anyone has a thirds.
Everyone's gotten to their second.
With?
I've got a third.
I also have a third.
I have a third, and I'm gonna make everyone who doesn't like blue angry. Chief Engineer! For 1U, you get a Vedalken Artificer, who's a 1-3, who says, artifact spells you cast have Convoke.
Did you really need more mana in blue? Really?
I did.
Ugh.
Sarum's greedy. She needs more artifact stuff.
It's 1-3, so it blocks a lot of white weenies, too.
Yeah. Just keep bouncing that Mirren Battlesphere. Make all the Convokers.
Yep. By this point in the game, I've just grown numb because of the concept of what blue gets. Like, I just look at stuff that blue gets, and I'm like, meh, I get it. It's understandable. It's blue. And I just move on.
My solution has always been to kill the blue players, and that makes me feel a lot better about it. Of all the blue cards you could have picked, you know, this is probably one of the ones that isn't going to make me super mad.
I will say, though, it looks like they're building Daleks in the background.
Now I gotta go look at this card. What was it again?
Chief Engineer.
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta go look for Chief Engineer now, you bastard.
Anyone want to
talk
about
the papers? I forgot. It's not just as simple as pulling it up. I hear the shuffling now.
It starts with a C.
Yeah, I know, but the papers are all mixed up now from me going through them.
Also, there's a dude hanging off one of those things in there. That's kind of funny.
All right, while we let Calvin get through his...
Ignore me. Just keep going.
Old-timey paper record. Last card that has me excited is Genesis Hydra. This yes. thing's cool. X and 2 green for a classic Hydra. It's going to have +1/+1 counters on it equal to X, and it has 0 power normally, so X is going to be, if you pay 6 for this card, it's going to be a 4/4. If you pay, like, 8, it's going to be a 6/6. And when you cast Genesis Hydra, reveal the top X cards of your library. You may put a non-land permanent card with converted mana cost X or less from among them onto the battlefield, then shuffle the rest into your library. This thing is so cool.
Yep. It's a baby Genesis wave. It's great. I absolutely loved it when I saw it, and it's going to be a very fun card to play.
And it's a plant Hydra, and Animar loves it.
Yeah, those totally are Daleks.
That was the right thing to say at the right moment. Yeah, no, I love how Magic seems to be intentionally making as badass Hydras as they possibly can. And this is definitely one of them. I'm trying to decide what general...
You know
what
that is, right?
Well, yeah, because they replace Worms, right?
Oh, it's because the Hercules movie's coming out soon.
Oh!
So The Rock has some tie-in with Magic the Gathering now?
Yeah!
He's going to be a legendary in the next set.
Well, see, doesn't The Rock already play D&D?
No. You're thinking of Vin Diesel.
Ah, okay.
Same thing.
They're interchangeable.
That's racist.
Ah!
I'm trying to decide who my Hydra general is gonna be. I'm trying to pick between like Roisin Meanderer or if I should just go mono green and make it Paul Ukranos.
Now see, that's why I went with Animar. Because with Animar, the Hydras just keep getting exponentially bigger.
Yeah, except I don't want to play blue because I'm not a terrible human being.
I know, and that's
why
you'll
never. Isn't the Hate Seed a Hydra?
Yeah, it is. Huh? Yeah, Ulash is a.
The Hate Seed is a Hydra, right?
She's a girl Hydra.
Yeah.
That's sexist.
That's sexist.
No, it's not true.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke Chewy.
Mwah. Yeah, no, I think I don't know if I'm going for Polukranos or if I'm going for, Roshin. If I'm going, like, full tribal, I'll probably do Polukranos. Yeah. Just to be delicious.
Well, if you're going for full tribal, then you go Roshin, because then you get some of the really sweet green-red Hydras, like the Apocalypse Hydra.
Yeah, but, like, if I'm going for the tribal theme, it's not gonna be a deck that's meant to win, it's gonna be a deck that's just on theme. So, if I'm doing that, I probably want a Hydra as the general.
Okay, that's fair.
Yep, fair.
Alright, so Jonathan, give us a third card that you like.
My final card I'd like to talk about is Scuttling Doom Engine.
Yeah!
It's an artifact creature, 6 mana. Scuttling Doom Engine can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less, and when it dies, it deals 6 damage to target opponent. The look of the card, it's fun, it's a good recurrable engine to keep working with. It's like a very baby version of Wyrmcoil Engine. Not quite as much value, it's still good to recur, but it'll still swing in and hit pretty hard when it does hit the field. So I think it'll be a fun card. It's not particularly competitive, but interesting.
All right, then. Chewy, card number 3.
I don't have a card number 3.
You don't have a card number 3?
You have a full set. Pick one.
Soul of Ravnica. No, wait. Damn it.
Pac-Man Watch.
Let me think. Are any of the Planeswalkers actually going to be...
Oh, man. The new green Planeswalker, Nissa.
Oh, the new Nissa's pretty good. World Waker?
Nissa, Garruk.
It's double Garruk.
Yeah.
Ooh, you could talk about Liliana.
Liliana's actually a really sweet bird.
Yeah, she's actually... She and, crap. Dark Realms are the only two Lilianas I've actually played in Commander. Dark Realms, you know, in the mono black deck. Yeah. But Liliana, just tutor up something. Thank you. Will do.
See, I actually played Dark Realms and I play Dark Realms in Olivia, actually, and that's partly because it has sweet synergy with Ravenscrime.
I only play Liliana of the Veil because I'm a big spender.
Oh, well, bully.
I'm running Dark Realms in my Dakin deck that I mentioned before because it searches up swamps, and why wouldn't I want more lands in that deck?
Right?
Esper Ramp. Go to hell.
Oh, wait a minute. Here's one I forgot to write down earlier.
It's Esper Ramp, all right?
What about Life's Legacy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a powerful card.
I like it. So it's one and a green. Hang on. I'm doing this from memory. For one and a green, it's a sorcery.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, good. Because otherwise it'd be broken as hell.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You sack a creature and draw a card. As an additional cost, you have to sack a creature, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you draw cards equal to that creature's power.
Yep.
And that is pretty awesome.
It's pretty freaking good.
Animar friggin' loves this card.
Prime Speaker.
Oh, that's my god, why don't you and Animar get a room?
We would, but the Master Wanderer's already taken me.
I mean, that's understandable.
That's mental images that, like, I never needed to have. Like, why?
That's why.
Because he's a giant elemental crab that gives me 2 free spells, Eric. That's more than you ever gave me.
So you're saying you have crabs?
Yep.
Walked into that one.
Giant elemental crabs. Those are such a bitch to get rid of.
I can't just buy the special shampoo.
See, the Master Wanderer likes Life's Legacy anyway, too, because then he just resets them. I mean, not in the Cascade, but yeah. So, then, Jonathan got his Scuttling Doom Engine in. I think the last one is Calvin.
That would be me.
That would be
And me. The card I'm going to go ahead with being the last card for this show will be the Devouring Light. It's the one colorless double white instant, has Convoke and Exile target attacking or blocking creature. And I'm going with this mainly because, like I've stated probably earlier, you may have heard it. If not, about a year ago, we did the set review where we were talking about Convoke mixed with Populate, and I got a chance to play with this card, and it's never left that deck because of the surprise factor of, like, oh, he's completely tapped out, a swing. Okay, well, tap 3 dudes, and boom, your guy's gone. It's one of those cards that I'm glad it's been reprinted, and I think it's actually going to end up showing up a lot more in Commander now because people are going to get a chance to play with it now. And it came out during a time when Commander really wasn't a thing, like, at all. So people probably weren't playing with it, but now people will get a chance to play with it. They'll see how good it is, and it'll get a chance to show up in more decks.
All right, and with that, yeah, we're all done. All right, everyone, we are going straight to our outro.
Shrapnel blast.
Okay, then. All right. So this has been Commander Cast, episode 150-something-ish. First thing I want to do is go ahead and thank everyone for showing up. Guys, thanks for showing up and making this the single most offensive podcast anyone outside of Dan Savage has any... anyone's heard outside of a Dan Savage podcast.
What the hell
is that? Rabble.
I sit my top hat and monocle to you.
Eric.
Alright, if you want to get a hold of me, you can do so at ericbonvie@gmail.com. That's ericbonvie@gmail.com. You can also see me at thatbonvieguy on Twitter. You can go to the CommanderCast proper site and see Rivals Duel, or go to subscribe to the Rivals Duel Facebook page. We're the other show on the site. It's just me and Noel arguing about stuff. It's super fun. Go listen and let your ears digest our bromance.
Yes, at some point they will be featuring the rug matchup. Who is more broken between the Riku's, Maelstrom Wanderer's, Animar's thing?
Maelstrom Wanderer. Argument settled. Done. Go.
All right, Chewy, contact information. If people want to get in touch with you, or if they want to check out your Kickstarter, where can they go?
Well, let's see. If you want to get in touch with me, I recommend Twitter. I am at the Manapool on Twitter. If you want to send me an email, that's Chewy, C-H-E-W-I-E, @mtgcast.com. If you want to check out the Kickstarter, I'm going to assume the link is in the show notes somewhere, but you can go to themanapool.com and find it there, along with everything else I'm doing, including, except for Monday Night Magic, actually. That's not on themanapool.com. Monday Night Magic is on mtgcast.com. Everything else is on the Manapool, including the videos that I've done, which, by the time this goes up, will hopefully be two or three. Don't forget that, never mind, because this goes up on Monday. So last weekend we did a live stream and it was awesome. Ha!
Well played.
It was so badass.
He's using his abilities to foresee the future right now.
Yeah.
All right, Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Sure. Probably the best way would be Twitter. My handle is @FlugTalk. Flug is my last name. That's PFLUGTALK.
PFLUG
Talk. TALK.
Okay, like that is nothing like I thought it was spelled.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I figured that's why I didn't give a shot at it before, but that's the best way to contact me. You could also email me at john@eastcoastcommander.com. Again, you could also read my articles up on there. I've got a bunch there, eastcoastcommander.com. We got some M15 previews coming, and yeah, that's pretty much it.
And Calvin, Mr. Surprise Guest Host of himself. If you want to get in touch with you, how can I do that?
If you want to get in touch with me, you can always go over to Twitter @CaptainRedZone, or you can hit me up in an email at CaptainRedZone@gmail.com. You can also go over to Facebook, where we have the CommanderCast page at. I'm pretty much over there constantly now, because since I can't make it to the show as often as I want to, I'm pretty much over there throwing up questions and photos and whatever randomness happens to involve EDH that comes around. That's basically the three best ways to get a hold of me, outside of, like, you know, just commenting on the show and then hoping I see it. But...
Alrighty then. If you want to get in touch with me here at CommanderCast, or just CommanderCast in general, go ahead and email us, CommanderCast@gmail.com. Responses may take 2 to 3 weeks. Here, or you can hit us up at the Twitter, @CommanderCast. We also have Tumblr. You can follow us, CommanderCast.tumblr.com. And the Facebook is run by Judge, run by Calvin. You can, you know, hit us up on our website, and CommanderCast.com. Leave us a comment. Actually, real quick shout out to Hayes, because that guy has been amazing so far stepping into the new editing role. Congratulations for you. He actually managed to get all of our archives as up-to-date as possible right now. Like, I'm going through right now, and Matt's stuff from Dodo Bird Productions is up. Eric's articles are up. Kitchen Table Tactics, Let's Kill. Like, it's up! It's actually up! My ineptness did not kill the archives. So I still need to work on putting up the actual episode archives now. Anyway.
I still gotta go back and edit a few of those anyway, because the IB link has disappeared from a couple of the older episodes.
Yeah, we gotta...
Don't know why.
Yeah, and we gotta figure out how to put, like, different seasons into zip files and all that, and work on the RSS feed, and... Alright, so...
What do you mean, we?
Yeah, exactly.
Sick burn.
So, thanks to everyone who contributes to our site. Like I said, you are all wonderful people. Without you, I would be a man sailing the ship off the edge, because I don't know how to work a rudder.
Hey, phrasing!
Thanks to Judson and Calvin for many our Facebook page. Music for our show is the X Meets Heavy Metal series by 331 E-Rock. Check them out on YouTube. Follow them around. That's good stuff. We'll see you next week with more community strategy and technology. Until then, let's get it! Congratulations, gentlemen. We really earned our explicit tag today.
Good night, and thanks for all the fish.
Yeah, seeing as how William's going to try to... Seeing as how Commander Cass is trying to do what it can to be continuous, it'd probably be a good thing to, like, get a couple cant episodes just to hold on to for those moments when it's like, oh, William's moving, he won't be back for 3 weeks. William's computer is blown up, and Calvin can't record or just throw a cant episode up for a couple of days or whatever the case may be.
Hey, that actually happened once.
Yeah, that's I think that's a great idea. Yeah. The other thing...
computer blew up while you were moving? That's fucked up.
Kind of ish. Like, I had actually, it's been like a month after I moved into my current apartment, and then my laptop just died, cause I used to leave it running all the time. Cause I had the smart idea of, hey, this thing takes forever to load. I wonder why. Turns out I had viruses and too many desktop stuff to load up. So I'll just go ahead and leave it running all night long. Then I don't have to go through the damn load up time every time I turn it on. Turns out that's not good for the fan or the computer.
Yep. And we can record a couple more episodes of six-pack set reviews. Start doing that again.
Yeah, start doing those. And at least we can have a few of those, like, saved up. Because even if it's just me and you, we could at least record, like, a six-pack set review on a Friday night. Yeah. And throw it into the can to hold on to. And then once, like, if Commander goes down for, like, a week or two, just throw a six-pack set review up instead. If not, just throw it up somewhere randomly throughout the week when an article goes missing, whatever the case may be.
Actually, on a related note, I won't be able to make this next Friday's, what the hell is that date? I won't be able to make it on the 25th because work has me scheduled that evening, which is weird because I almost always have that night off otherwise.
That's fine. I don't need you anyway, Dietch.
Oh, shit!
Well, I needed you, Calvin. I don't know what I have myself.
I'm sorry. Like, you know, like, I got a Friday available and want to go ahead, potentially use that day to try to record a few, like, work those cast episodes, try to record, like, maybe a six-pack set review. We've recorded a couple of cant episodes, but now suddenly you don't have the time. Now you don't have time for me. I understand. I get it. You don't want to be around me, William. Just admit it. Just admit it. I understand.
It's only because
William hates black people.
just say it, William. I want to hear you say it right now. Tell me you hate black people.
Is the recorder still running? Is the recorder still running?
Yes, it's still running. But Calvin, I am so hurt right now. I mean, you're my brother, man.
Why you gotta be a brother?
I came out. Well, unless he's secretly a woman. I mean, like, I'm kind of gender fluid-ish, so that would make sense that I could. I mean, like, it would make sense that I could call myself his sister. But like, as far as I know, Calvin's pretty cis.
Did you just call me sick?
This is going into some strange corners here.
This was a lot of fun. Calvin, I'm so glad you showed up at the last minute because you have no class.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm glad to actually get a chance to talk with you for a little while there, Chewy. I've missed you all this time. I'm kind of waiting for you guys to do your next Commander Month so I can try to see if I can squeeze into one of those episodes.
Maybe. I did a second one. So on Monday, I had to drive 12 hours for my bizarre-ass job. Came back, and I was exhausted, but I wasn't sleepy. Like, I couldn't get up, but I couldn't go to sleep. So I said, you know what? This sounds like a perfect time to record another episode. And I've watched it now, and it's actually not so bad, so I'm going to go ahead and use it. And it's the most randomest card ever. It's one I'd never even heard of. And
I don't want to know. I want to see the video. I want to be just as shocked as everybody else.
No, I'm not going to spoil it. But okay.
Alrighty.
That's what I'm working on, so hopefully I'll have it up. If not tonight, then definitely tomorrow. And I'll let you know.
I need to remember to ask Calvin what episode this actually is overall. Like, I think he said it was,
first episode of the new season. That's all that matters.
Well, no, because we're not doing the seasons anymore. Like, it's actually going to have a hard episode count, and I can't.
How did you guys make that decision?
We hired a new Hayes is our new editor over at the site, and he brought.
So you don't get a season anymore? That always confused me when you guys took breaks.
Yeah, like, pretty much that. And, like, when you take a break for a whole month, it's good and it's refreshing, and you come back actually really excited to podcast once you, if you're not used to just kind of doing that. But then you lose listeners who are like, oh, they're not empty anymore, let's go see what else, and they don't come back.
Oops. Yeah, listeners have a attention span of probably around,
2 hours?
What you say? 5 seconds?
Yeah. And then it throws off your rhythm, too, because it's like, oh, gotta record tonight. Oh, wait, we're not recording tonight. Huh. Well, I guess I'm just going to watch Sword Art Online for the next 3 hours or something. I don't know.
How is that, by the way? I haven't seen it yet, but it sounds good. Not being an anime person, I'm a little hesitant.
Sword Art is good as long as you're not expecting the show to be good.
Okay.
That's the worst phrase I've ever heard.
Let me put it this way. The most accurate description I have heard about it is that it is Twilight for teenage boys.
Yeah, no, that sounds terrible.
Yes, but that's also part of why it's fun, because once you realize that it's supposed to be kind of bad, then you start having fun with it.
And this is, okay, but like, that works for like an hour. How many episodes of this show are there?
More than an hour.
Yeah, more than an hour. I mean, it starts off cool enough, but then it gets weird. Like, it goes really fast. Like, okay, everyone's trapped in the virtual world. Oh my god. Guy's starting off at like level 1. 3 episodes later, he's like level 60 plus something.
So Dragon Ball Z number escalation.
Kind of. And now they're on like season 2 where everything's guns. Like, they've gone from fantasy to guns. It's like going from World of Warcraft to playing Halo, but with the same characters.
Oh. It's the same shit.
Pretty much.
World of Warcraft, Halo, I don't even notice a difference anymore. What are video games anyway?
A small, miserable pile of
sin. Damn it, you beat me to it. How about
you? Just waiting for you to be unlocked? Okay, so.
He has a Calvin drawstring, and he just pulls it to get a boobs.
I wish I had a drawstring to pull to get a boobs.
I think they call that the flight waitress button. Wait.
But.
Oh, my
wow.
God. That was horrible. Calvin needs to take that out now.
You're like, that's going at the end.
Oh, God.
That's staying right there.
All right. But Calvin, going into that, into the build-up, you need to have, like, a fading in of your, the segment thing, into the red zone track.
What do you mean, my theme music?
Yeah, your theme music. It just needs to fade in. Because I was doing this whole really monotone and proper kind of gentleman host act talk voice. And then we get Calvin.
My current favorite that was chosen not at all at random from my commander decks that I have over here somewhere is the Black Achroma, Spirit of the Night. Ha ha!
Ooh.
I love that.
Spicy.
Alright.
He's sort of like Calvin, except, you know, actually black. Wait, is that gonna get left in?
We'll see.
Depends how you treat him for the rest of the episode.
Now I'm so happy that he showed up, because last time I did this, no one told me Kelvin wasn't going to be here until I got here. And now I was told he wasn't going to be here, and now he's here, so I'm all excited.
He's giggly like a little schoolgirl.
The ultimate reverse psychology.
This is the best way to get Joey on is tell him that I'm not going to be here, and then he just shows up, and poof, Kelvin.
Well, I gotta go, you guys.
But it's time for me to step one out.
Calvin, we need to get the Archer clip of phrasing so that you can put that in anytime.
Phrasing?
Yes. Anytime an inappropriate joke is made so that it suddenly becomes okay.
Tells me we're going to use that button a lot also. Just a hunch.
Yeah, that's going to be a frequent thing.
Hey, we're loose cannons here. We are maximum professional. The loosest of professional cannons here.
So, phrasing.
Sorry, the one thing I have to say is, like, I was actually kind of hoping that when Chewie came on that I'd have been able to use the Vegeta over 9,000 clip. But he already used it in one of his videos, and they're already, like, at 10,000. So it's like, it's kind of like, I could still put it in, but it's kind of late.
I mean, technically it is over 9,000, but... Yeah, dude, like, I woke up that morning and I looked, and it was over 9,000. I was like, yes, just doing the joke. And I recorded the video, and I tracked down the audio and the image and all that shit. And then I woke up. No, then I didn't wake up. I was already woken up. And then I started putting it together, and then we had to record. So I stopped working on the video, and we recorded the show while we were recording the show. Like, we broke 10, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's so awesome. And then I got to thinking about it. I was like, son of a bitch, I got to redo that video.
You might as well slap him with a wet duck. I swear that guy was stoned.
And now he's your editor.
Was that Hayes?
Yeah, that was Hayes.
Oh, for the love of fuck, no. Oh, slap him with a wet duck.
I miss you guys.
We missed you too, Will.
Let's never break up again.
Oh, man.
In order to make sure that I didn't have to actually go through the process of digging through the internet to try to find the cards, I actually printed out a stockpile of papers that has images of all the cards from M15.
So you have full printouts of the set in front of you right now.
Yep.
Wow. Are you worried that an EMP is going to go off in the middle of your recording and you aren't going to be able to check the cards? Why'd you have to go analog?
Yeah, that's because also you have that much printer paper. I don't even have a printer. Like,
well, the thing is like, well, one, I did it at work. It's not my paper. Oh. It's my paper now. But...
It wasn't my paper, but I marked it. It's mine now.
But it's mine now. And two, whenever I try to like use certain, because when I record, I'm using my phone on Skype right now. And whenever I try to, like, open up a window while on Skype, it gives me a huge delay. And then I'll be talking, and then it just, like, goes silent. And then, out of nowhere, I just kind of come in like Speedy Gonzalez, just jammering off, like, a bunch of randomness. And it just obviously becomes something that just needs to be fixed or checked or edited. In order to avoid that, because I know we've got, like, 5 people on the call, and there's no reason to mess that up, might as well just go ahead and print this off and look at what I know I need to look at.
Not only that, but there's only room for one Hispanic on this show.
That's racist.
I know, but like, are we doing like the token racial characters? We got 3 white dudes, a black guy, and a Hispanic guy, and that makes us multicultural. But we can't have more than one.
That would be me.
I was about to ask, does Canada count?
Canada, yeah, no.
There's the white guy, the Hispanic guy, the white guy, and then there's the Canadian guy.
No one really knows his lineage. We think he just crawled out of a beaver dam one day.
Descended from moose.
All we know about him is that he's super polite and doesn't lock his doors.
One day Maple. We don't have doors.
Like, I just kind of assumed, like, it was just, like, open space. It's like, anytime you just wanted something, you just go, like, you know, just walk up, grab, like, sugar from somebody's house, walk back out, do what you gotta do, leave the toilets open.
We don't have front doors. Like, I'm not fucking with you. We have bathroom doors, and we have, like, some bedrooms have doors, but, like, the houses don't have front doors.
Well then.
So how do you keep the gangbangers out at night?
I don't get anymore out.
They put up signs that say, please no gangbangers.
Oh, okay.
And the gangbangers are like, yeah, oh. Next house, boys!
This is Canada, sir. They just have to ask nicely, and these things don't happen to them.
Yeah, the Mounties are always walking by on their horses. I'm wondering, I think I had Will fooled for a second. I think Will actually believed that we didn't have front doors for like 30 seconds.
Home version!
Who's doing the home version now?
That's what you get when you lose in the first round on Double Dare or something.
I got that reference.
Glad someone did.
I'm sorry, anytime anyone points out, I got that reference, it makes me so happy.
No, Calvin, go ahead. Like, yeah, for reals. Well, yeah, so just right. For reals, go ahead and tell us so that we have, like, context to go off.
I don't think he wants to be choking on a silver highboard. That thing does not look fun to put anywhere near you.
Well, she's just a big, cuddly, alien insect monster thing.
And I'm letting
and
you know right now, it's not that
adjustable. And I just found out things about Will's preferences that I never wanted to know.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's an anime for that one.
I think it's called Blue Gender.
And going to Google right now.
Don't do it, Calvin! Don't make that mistake! It's a trap!
I'm also gonna pour one out for Primetime for that debate, because he really, he's not relevant anymore, so.
Yeah.
Well, we can always just, you know, replace Primetime in this discussion and edit out any mentionings of him with Avenger of Zendikar. I mean, you know, the mana cost is a little different, but it's basically best thing in that color for comparison against Soul of Zendikar.
Change
of
power.
See, even Avenger of Zendikar can give you a hell of a lot more than just a 3-3 beast. You drop an Avenger of Zendikar at the right time, you can just have like an army of just like Sapperling, like plant tokens.
I feel like I'm going to walk outside after all this, and there's just going to be a bloody Soul of Zendikar sitting out there because you beat the shit out of it, Calvin.
Oh, yeah.
I just built a Heliod deck, and it just craps out clerics like nobody's business, and I love the idea of running over.
There's a cream for that.
No, assemble the Legion into Soul of Theros, hold back cards and prevent yourself from being blown out, and just keep swinging with 3-3 first strike lifelinking hasters every turn.
You just played two, five cost or more bombs. You are not holding back cards. You are setting yourself up to be blown out.
But you've only committed two cards to the board.
Yes. You've committed two bombs to the board.
And you've also convinced everyone else that you're not a threat somehow, which I don't know how you're doing it with those two on the field.
I'm going to broadcast what my next turn is going to be. Please don't hurt me.
That's what I'm doing for the next three turns. I am the victim.
Okay. As he plays it, he just starts singing, why can't we be friends?
But, you know, the Soul of Theros is something I do plan on putting into my red-white deck anyway, mainly because I play a lot of small dudes anyway, and usually they're really aggressive. And I believe 7 is the highest it goes up to, and the only reason it goes up to 7 is because I've got Gisela in the deck.
Oh, yeah, same.
So I can easily see myself
slide. That bitch?
Yeah, that bitch. I got that bitch in the deck.
That bitch that stood me up all pre-release weekend?
Stop hating.
I've been doing an interesting experiment where I've been taking my decks and I like run out the list for what I want to put in it, right? And then instead of doing the normal cuts, the first thing I do is cut everything that costs more than 5 and see how the deck looks after that.
Really? That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, that's a strange... That's a low cutoff, but have you kept any deck just straight under 5 at that point?
Yeah, and it's amazing. The few exceptions I'll make is like, I'll put in Karn if the deck has a lot of ramp already or something like that. But for the most part, what it means is that, in the early game, I'm always drawing cards I can play, And then in the late game, I've usually set myself up to draw more than one card, or I'm usually finding a way to, like, dig for extra value. So I've made it so that I can do more than one thing a turn. And it's made, like, amazingly consistent and powerful decks. And because of that, I could also run cards like Keldon Firebombers, and I can just recover better than my opponents can, because I'm like, hey, my curve is too higher than this.
Oh, Keldon Firebombers. You have my heart now, Eric.
There's a wicked echo, by the way. Who doesn't hear an echo because it's you?
No, I hear an echo.
No, I hear an echo.
I heard an echo.
I got nothing.
Oh, then it's you, then. Why are we hearing an echo from you?
That's a great question. I don't know.
I'm trying to help Kelvin out. With...
Well, Jonathan, whose sentiments do you echo about this card?
But...
But I,
winning!
I have someone laying beside me who laughed at how bad that joke was, for the record.
Like I said...
And don't forget, that person is imaginary.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because Eric doesn't actually have friends, so they don't exist.
Alright. But all the same.
He just keeps playing on his little lute and just crying into a dish.
Yisan is like the guy that Susei dumped because he couldn't keep up.
Alright.
So here's a question. Well, how long do you think Susei actually, Yisan? Yisan?
Yeah. Yeah.
How long do you think Yisan had to live in order to get that giant worm in the back of his art?
See, that big worm, I'd have to say he lived to at least turn 5 or 6. Well, hold on, that one's kind of small, so maybe it's a small one, so that may be like turn 4.
Is that a crow worm back there? I don't know what that is.
Wait, let me see this worm, hold on.
No, it's a bug. It's not just a worm, it's like an insect. So it's probably on the lower end.
I'm thinking worm harvest, no?
It's like a gigapede or something.
Like, most worms seem to be about the 4-5 range. Unless they're, like, just stupid big, then they're, like, 6s and 7s.
The point is, someone let Yisan live for too long.
Yeah.
Yay, Resident Archangel.
Homestretch.
Before we go too much further into the homestretch, a couple of little things that I want to point out. One, by the time this goes up, East Coast Commander... That's where you're correct. From, John, right?
Yes.
We'll have been around for a year now, correct?
That is correct. Yes, we are.
And I noticed because I went back and listened to an old episode, and that was when we had on the other two guys from East Coast Commander, and they were only like 3 weeks in or so, and that was posted back, I believe it was July 28th when we posted that, 23rd, somewhere around the end of July?
Yes. We just...
The main reason I went back to look... Okay.
You there, Kyle? Yeah. Oh yeah, no, we just passed over that. I've been with the site now for 6 months, and Christian's been behind it. He's been awesome. I mean, he's really pulled everybody in. The other two writers, James and Chris, have also came on fairly recently too. But Christian's been the main force. He's had it up. He's been great about getting people involved in it with, the sending out a pack for every time you write an article. That's how I started with it. And he's just been great encouraging, and I'm happy to see us reach the year mark. I mean, we've got a lot of cool stuff coming up. And we got our M15 previews, and Christian's got something real big coming for August dealing with artists. So, tune into the site again, eastcoastcommander.com for all the listeners out there, and check it out once that hits in August.
Yep. And the main reason I actually went back and looked up that particular episode was because that was the episode when we talked about Convoke and what was the other? Populate together as a deck. So it's been roughly 1 year, and almost exactly 1 year later, we are now still talking about Convoke.
Yep, it's back.
I don't know about still talking about Convoke.
Well, us. Well, you know, on the side. I mean, like, you know, like, if you look at this like, oh yeah, a year ago we were talking about Convoke. Here it is a year later, we're now talking about Convoke. I just kind of like the coincidence, irony. I'm not sure what the right word for this particular situation is, but it's a situation, and we're in it.
I like to think, Calvin, that you actually have been talking about Convoke every single day in that time period,
every
so
day.
You're really, really invested in it now.
Okay, so I have a quick question before we move on. If you were to make a 5-mana or less Jund EDH deck, would you rather play Sekuar as the general or Kresh?
Who, me?
Everyone.
Wait, what?
If I was building a deck, 5 mana or less, and I had to pick between Sekuar or Kresh.
Like, I'm all going the cards Sekuar. Are going to cost 5 or less.
Sekuar, because every time you're going to get the smaller stuff no matter what. You probably can get some decent token creators. If you're going Kresh, you want some of those bigger creatures so that when they die, he's getting encounters.
Kresh just becomes monstrous.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, don't get me wrong, Kresh can get pretty big because of all the little guys that'll be dying, but there'll be those times where it's like, he'll be out and you kind of just want a 6-6 or an 8-8 to die so he could just, like, one-shot somebody.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, murdering half your team just to get him to the same size that you could have got for, like, sacrificing, like, a titan or something.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of hasty stuff, so I think that I always knew that Sekuar was gonna win just because of those 3-1s with haste. Sekuar. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to figure out a way to work hunting into this podcast.
What?
Well, you just did.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Oh, I just peed again.
I need to mute.
Medicast.com.